We are actually do having a quorum, so we're just counting step of the member that has come in, because we have to make sure that all of them are GPS. So I knew that was just a minute to the door. So we would actually ask that we formally open our meeting and request that we look at apologies, and I'll ask Secretary to speak to that.
Chairperson, we have received an apology from the Deputy Minister Kina, who was not able to attend. Also, Mr. Simmons informed us that Ms. Mantash and Ms. Mwatse will not be able to attend this morning's proceedings. And Mr. Cutler indicated that he is stuck in traffic. He should join the committee shortly. I have not received any other apologies from anyone else.
Thank you very much, Secretary. I think with the opening in terms of apologies, it does actually allow us to proceed with the meeting. The purpose of today's meeting, I think on the agenda, if you look further, is actually a briefing by Minister on SONA budget as it relates to the DTI and EDD. We do actually have the other part of the DTI-EDD third quarter, financial and non-financial. It's actually proposed to the committee to look at those two presentations. I'm sure the committee will be comfortable with that. Can I just get the committee to indicate? Mover? Mwene?
Morning, Chair. I move for the presentation of that.
Thank you very much. Let me take down.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning. I second the motion.
Thank you very much. The purpose is to receive the briefing by the Minister on how the Ministry's mandate will support the nation's strategic priorities expressed in the 2020 SONA, 2020-2021 budget. Minister, we do actually have the 19th February statement with us, and we understood that you'll be working from that. Obviously, we will be still looking at the budget of the department soon. And I think we are just a month away to have the new structured department. It will be DG, Trade and Industry and Competition. Thank you very much. Floor is yours, Minister, and welcome to everybody.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honourable members, to the two Director Generals, and as well as the staff of the department, and to the members of the public and media that are present here today. Chairperson, let me start by appreciating this opportunity to engage with the committee, particularly on the topic of the extent to which SONA and the budget will impact on the work of the DTIC. And I start with noting, if I may, the apologies of both Deputy Minister Gina and Deputy Minister Majola. There is a cabinet committee that all cabinet members and deputy ministers are expected to attend. I have asked for leave of absence, given that the committee had specifically made this arrangement for a briefing on SONA and the budget, but my two deputy ministers do tender the apologies. Chairperson, the topic that you've chosen as a committee is really about how the big vision that the President set out will be supported in the work by the department. In the file that the department has prepared, we've put together a copy, obviously, of the President's speech, the necessary budget documents, as well as my intervention in the SONA debate that took place. Later this morning, the two Directors General will be briefing the committee on the quarterly reports, and committee members will begin to see from the next quarter's report some of the ideas and work that the President has indicated begins to filter through even even before the commencement of the new financial year. I wanted today to be a more high-level discussion with the committee, talking and dialoguing with the committee, setting out how the vision of SONA is going to shape the work and how our work is going to support SONA. SONA, of course, sets out the overall frame for government priorities for the year ahead. And in the budget vote, what we will do is we will take the SONA vision, the national budget, and we'll capture it in programmatic sense to say, from a program point of view, this is how we are going to allocate resources and policy priorities to achieve that. So today I'm going to be somewhat more high level and say that there are three direct impacts of SONA on the work of the DTIC. The first is core programs driven by the department itself, where the department will do most of the heavy lifting in an area identified in SONA. The second one is cross-cutting work, where many departments have to collaborate to achieve the vision of SONA. And the final one is areas where the department is affected and can make play a supporting role. There are six core areas. There are five cross-cutting areas that I identified, and there are four areas impacting on the success of the DTIC mandate. Let me high level first give the committee the bullet points before going into each of these. The six core areas that the DTIC will do significant work, of course nothing in government is ever done by one department alone, but where the heavy lifting would be in the hands of the department and its entities, would be investment promotion, the industrial master plans, the African continental free trade area, competition, the opening of the economy, spatial development through special economic zones, and the ease of doing business through company registration. Those are the six core priorities. We are, I would call them core areas. Then there are five areas, they're cross-cutting, meaning they affect our department very profoundly, but they also affect every other department very significantly, and we will make our contribution to these five cross-cutting areas. And these areas are, number one, compacting and partnerships to promote the growth agenda. Number two, transformation with a special focus on youth and women. Number three, the green economy. Number four, the digital economy. And number five, the district development model. So those would be the five cross-cutting areas. Then, as I indicated, there are four areas impacting on the success of our mandate and where we play supportive roles. They are, number one, infrastructure, with a focus, obviously, on ports and energy as two key areas. Number two, skills development. Number three, the policy initiatives of departments and the opportunities for localization. And the final one is the work on the Sovereign Wealth Fund. Finally, I would like to just make a remark or two on the budget. So that's the structure of the remarks. And honorable members will see the scaffolding of it in the remarks during the SONA debate. And this is really a further attempt at elaborating on them. So dealing with the core areas, investment promotion, the President said quite a bit about the investment conferences and the importance of investment, and he indicated pledges that were made to the value of 664 billion rand. Now what is our job as the department? Our job is to land these pledges, to do the hand-holding that's necessary for companies between an announcement and the actual implementation. With these pledges, I should indicate, comes in different forms. Some is a new factory, what we call greenfields. The other one is expanding an existing factory or retooling it, what we call brownfields. Some are simply an investment project that we put on hold, the pause button was pressed, and through our initiatives we can unpause it and get the project off the ground. Now our work is to take each of these more than 100 projects and companies and bit by bit to unblock them from an intention to fruition. It's a lot of work. Sometimes it means unblocking an individual project, getting a water use license, dealing with the fact that communities are protesting at the construction site, getting a work permit for an international expert to come in, sorting out a land issue with a municipality, or monitoring a deadline that the company had indicated and saying to them, what more can we do to assist? So really, it's doing that kind of concrete work, and there are hundreds of problems that comes up when you want to land a multi-billion rand project. And somebody in government needs to be your friend and say, we will try to unblock an assist. So that's one of the things that the department does. Linked to that is we've got to now help to create an environment for investment to get additional commitments by the time we get to the investment conference in November, the third investment conference. So that's the focus under the six core areas. That's one of the focus areas. The second one is the master plans. Now the committee has been briefed last year on the master plans, and I would love the opportunity, Chairperson, to have at some stage with the DGs sit and brief the committee through each master plan. Today I'm not intending to do that. Today I'm indicating where we are on the aggregate, in general where we are. So where are we? We've got 7 master plans that's been driven by the DTIC, where our department is doing most of the initial work and coordinating it, and I want to say where we are on those 7. 3 of them are completed. They are the auto, the clothing and textiles, and the poultry. But completed is really saying it's the start of our work. We now need to ensure implementation. What we recognize is that you don't only need an agreement, you also need to implement, do the hard, disciplined work of carrying out your commitments. So in each of these, there's an enormous amount of things that government needs to do. If I may take clothing and textiles just as an example of it, we need to implement our commitments to ensure that there's incentives available for the industry in the new financial year. We need to crack down on illegal imports. And then retailers have commitments, manufacturers, the unions, and each of these we need to monitor, interact, and help them ensure that they achieve their goals. Take the autos as an example. There we're saying, how can you expand the domestic market, get more car buying in South Africa, improve localization, that the components in the car are also manufactured in South Africa. Work on infrastructure, how to get the cars from the Rosslyn factory in Pretoria through to a port and from a port to the markets globally. Sort out the challenges of technology that South Africa is not making cars of the 20th century when the world has moved to the 21st century. So land the hybrid vehicle that Toyota is going to produce here, but also bring electric vehicles in. Develop skills that South Africa doesn't become a low-cost producer based on poor labor standards, but that we become the significant skills-based economy on the African continent with high skills and high capability in the local economy. And then develop the African regional market for cars. So those would be the kind of things I can take the committee for poultry and the other areas. But the point I'm making is the department in the year ahead will now work to achieve the President's vision by implementing. Moving on, one master plan is almost complete. That's the sugar industry master plan. So we need to work the last few weeks, 3-4 weeks, to land it, to get as many of the players to agree, and then to sign the master plan, and then implementation start. One master plan is being fast-tracked. That's the steel master plan, which also impact on the export tax that Minister Mboweni mentioned in the budget, and I know the committee will have a session that will look, among others, at the Saldanha Steel issue in a few weeks' time, and perhaps that is an opportunity to make a few more remarks on the that master plan. Two other master plans are in early stage development. We've begun the work, we've still got a fair bit to do, and they are furniture and a sector that we call chemicals and plastics. So that would be where the DTIC leads the work. But there are other, eight other master plans where we're going to help other departments. We're going to be support people. We hope we'll score a few assists in the process. If I can use the football analogy, they're the oceans economy and forestry, tourism, agriculture, which include cannabis, I should indicate, mineral beneficiation, that includes gas and renewables, the digital economy, health, aerospace and defense, and the creative industries. So those are the other eight other areas where there will be time and energy and resources, even a little bit of budget, that we'll make available as the DTIC to help sister departments to land those master plans. Finally, we're looking at a broader green economy master plan that goes beyond renewable energy, and we'll be coming back in due course on that. I next move to the African Continental Free Trade Area. The President spoke at some length on the importance of Africa to our economic futures. So what are we going to do in the year ahead? First, we're going to be spending a lot of time building institutions. An agreement is only as good as the people who will implement. The people put together is your institution. So we need to build the Secretariat of the Continental Free Trade Area, working with every other African country, making sure that there's the necessary capability, resources, and so on. We're also going to launch or host the extraordinary summit of heads of state in South Africa in May this year, where the heads of state of the African Union countries will be converging on South Africa to finalize the terms of the Continental Free Trade Agreement. We're going to do a lot of work on industrial products, tying up which products we will say we will commit to liberalizing or reducing the schedules of tariffs. We'll finalize what is regarded as a made in Africa product, and we will develop plans for deeper trade integration, working with the private sector. But that's only the first part. There are many other areas. We're going to tie up a commitment on services, integration of services markets like telecoms, finance, legal, those kind of services. We want to really work on the Made in Africa label, get that label uniformly introduced across the continent. And then we'll work on investment, intellectual property, and competition protocols. So, honourable members will see it's a very big work program on the Continental Free Trade Area. And in discussion with the DG, we've indicated the budget will begin to reflect this as we shift more resources over the next period to this big project, the African project. I move next to competition as an area that we want to focus on. The President spoke at length in SONA about competition. So what are we going to do in the period ahead? That's a long work program. I'm going to spare the committee at this session the chapter and verse of it, and try to indicate at the more big picture level the big things we're going to do on competition. Market inquiries will be big. So we're going to launch a new market inquiry, and we're going to implement the commitments that have come out of the other market inquiries, like data costs, to try to land a final agreement to reduce the cost of data. Groceries, where we're going to seek to put an end to some of the exclusive leases that large grocery retailers have, sometimes 20 years, sometimes 30 years, they lock themselves into a exclusive position where no smaller players can come in. We're going to finalize a code of conduct of how big retailers interact with little suppliers, small businesses, and so on. We are going to implement the new regulations on price discrimination and abuse of market power that has been published on the 13th of February. So a regulation is simply a regulation until it's implemented, when it effectively begins to change behavior. And we need to work with the Competition Commission to strengthen its capabilities in preparation for the implementation of the new commitments it has in the Act. And with that will come completing the outstanding work on the Competition Act. There are some things Parliament agreed previously, that we're getting the institutional work, we're implementing the Act in phases. We're now at phase two, we're preparing for phase three of the implementation. Moving briefly to special economic zones, the President said one thing about special economic zones, and that is the Tshwane Auto Special Economic Zone. So what we'll do there is, this is an experiment. It's an experiment led by the Director General. We've put our most senior official into a particular project to say, the special economic zone models that we had in the past has only had limited impact. It's not been as successful as we wanted it to be. So we're experimenting with a new approach. Cabinet took a new policy position, and we're working closely with Tshwane, Gauteng, and national government to find a new model. As we get this going, we need to roll out those lessons in all the special economic zones, including special economic zones in areas like Richards Bay, in areas like Saldanha, in Maluti Apupong, where all of them, they're battling, they're struggling, they're not doing well. And with new insights, we can get them working differently. Finally, the ease of doing business. The President spoke about that. He praised the BIS portal platform that we had launched through the CIPC. So what do we do in this period ahead? We want to now bed down. We're in pilot phase. We've done what we call a soft launch. It's beginning to work. We've had a significant number of companies that have registered using this platform. As we get more confident that the platform is strong, that it's robust, we're going to be this year rolling it out. What does it mean? Much more communication, encouraging more people not to stand in a queue or pay a high cost to a consultant to do the company registration for them, but go online and do it. And some of it may mean improving the system, migrating it to the cloud, those kind of things. So that concludes, Chairperson, the core areas, six core areas where when we've looked at SONA, we can see DTIC will do most of the work there. The five cost-cutting areas, I'm going to be a little bit briefer about the areas. The first one is building partnerships and social compacts. And the President spoke about the importance, the strength of our democracy, that it's a participatory democracy. Now, we need to take that strength into the economy and develop much deeper partnerships. There's a few areas. Big part of our work is to build a consensus with business and labor, but it's a consensus not to do the minimum. It's not the lowest common denominator. We're pushing into saying everybody must bring more. Government must bring more. We're not doing enough. We recognize that, and our new program is about doing that. But so to the business community and organized labor, we're asking them, there's got to be deeper give in the partnership if we want to change the future of the country. And master plans will be our experiment in doing this effectively, really building strong partnerships. We've had many unions involved in the process of crafting the master plans, and they've made commitments in those master plans. Second is transformation. The President spoke about the procurement bill that will be introduced in Parliament. Our job as the DTIC is to do many of the other things that can complement the transformation focus of government, so that we don't end up only giving preferential contracts to small businesses and women-owned enterprises and so on, but there's no support ecosystem. So we're talking, for example, with large companies. Can you mentor smaller players? We're saying to them, when they land contracts with the state, can you also include them in your supply chain and bring some of the quality control and other very important elements of long-term competitiveness to that partnership? We're going to be looking at integrating our different BEE programs. I'm speaking later this week at the BBC conference, where we're looking at how can we take many different disparate government initiatives and begin to let them talk to each other so that we can see the impact of transformation and empowerment. Youth is a specific area. The IDC will be getting a target from us as a ministry for the next 5 years, and the business process services program of the DTIC will be a big way of bringing young people on scale into the economy. I've also asked that we look at all the incentives of the department. Let's just report what impact do they have on the employment or entrepreneurial opportunities for young people. And finally, as I've indicated, we've done a very robust Black Industries program. Now we need to complement that with much better qualitative support, not from government, because we don't run businesses, but from larger businesses, from retired business people, so that we lift up the quality of the management capability that we're developing. Women, with the president, indicated an enormously important target that the IDC has for the next 5 years, 10 billion rand of own and partner funding. And so we need to monitor that. Monitor doesn't mean we ask once a quarter for a report. It's really sitting and working with the IDC to address the challenges of getting enough projects on the table, looking at those projects, even if a project is poorly formulated, but the core business idea is great, working with a person. If the core business idea is not capable of flying, be honest, open, indicate that, because we can't obviously back something that's going nowhere. So it's doing all of that work in partnership with the IDC. And then there's the district development model. It's a very important part of what we're going to be doing, taking the 44 districts and the 8 metros, and that's 52 units, and saying to the department, can we take every area, take for example your master plan, say what impact it will have in a particular district, and take the investment conference, what will it mean for a particular district? Now, I'm going to ask the committee to bear with us. It will take many, many months before we develop a usable dashboard and capability, but we're going to start immediately at the start of the new financial year to launch that, and then bit by bit we'll build it over a period, learning from our experience. So that you as honourable members who represent constituencies can also begin to see more clearly the connection between what we report here and what your constituents are looking to government to enable, to facilitate, to open up space for. Climate change and the green economy, the President spoke about the new industrial opportunities in the green economy, and so we started to think how best do we do that. Yesterday we had the Vice President of the European Union in visiting South Africa with a portfolio responsible for climate change and the green economy, Vice President Timmermans, and we started a conversation about the opportunities in South Africa for the green economy. Let me just take one example. We are a significant producer of quality vanadium. Quality vanadium used to go in the old days just into steel making. As a result of climate change, people are looking at vanadium now as a critical input into the development of these massive batteries that you store grid energy. We're not talking cell phone batteries here, the lithium ion. We're talking the grid batteries that can take wind power and solar energy and store it for when there's no wind and when the sun is down. So that South Africa has got the potential to get into that, but it will take an enormous amount of work, hard work, to land a project like that. And so we're going to be doing a little bit of work on how the green industrialization can help create jobs locally. The third area that I said it is critical to our success, but it's an area, four areas that we will be working with others, we'll be in some cases supporting their work, is infrastructure, it's energy and ports as two immediate areas, skills development. Clearly, if we're going to build a manufacturing economy of the future, then we need to develop the skills that will be utilized by the factory of the future. There's the policy initiatives, for example, if the Department of Basic Education is going to be giving tablets to kids, these electronic tablets, is there a localization opportunity? What's the scale? What do we need to do to land that? And then the work that we'll do across government on the Sovereign Wealth Fund is, of course, a key issue for the long term to give us the resource base to be able to promote investment. But the Sovereign Wealth Fund does many other things besides that. It's also a critical mechanism that is used in societies with significant resource base to moderate the commodity cycle. Because the challenge that commodity-based economies have is when you have a boom, you get a massive inflow of resources into your economy, your exchange rate strengthens, your industrial performance goes down because your currency is too strong. When you have a bust, then at that stage you've got no industry left. So it's time to also think through the strategic use of that. On the budget, as I begin to conclude my remarks, given the challenges that Minister Mboweni indicated in the national budget that he tabled a short while ago, different departments all have had to share a little bit of the pressure and the fiscal challenge. In the case of the DTIC, its overall budget will be reduced from 11.7 billion rand as the planned budget to 11 billion next financial year. And then it will reduce to about 10 billion rand in the financial year thereafter, before recovering to about 10.5 billion rand. Our job is to do two things. The one is to keep on internally focusing on how we can get more with the available resources. So that means reprioritizing, sharpening our incentives, getting a higher return for every rand of South African taxpayer money that is utilized. So that's an important part. It forces us now to relook how we can get more value for money out of our incentives. The other part is to keep on making the point about a growth-inducing approach to dealing with the economic challenges that we face. And that means ensuring that we don't reduce that support we give to the private sector that is critical to jobs, growth and transformation. So it's managing that. If we need to take a little bit of a reduction to ensure that it doesn't hit your core, the muscle of the department. If it hits less sensitive areas, it will be less damaging, but it's got to make sure that the bits that really invigorate the economy, that has a positive and active effect on what we do, is not reduced. So that means within our work, how do we ensure that the core commitments in the master plan, in the investment drive in special economic zones and industrial parks and in the African continental free trade area is not reduced or undermined in any way. And that's a bit of work now that the final budget details have been agreed and communicated to entities and others. We now will look at how we can get more value for money. So if I can sum up, Chairperson, basically what the remarks cover. They say that the framework for the department's work is set by SONA, the State of the Nation Address by the President. We we've identified six core areas where we, the main drivers, the department has to do the heavy lifting. We've identified five cross-cutting areas. They absolutely important to our work. The department will contribute significantly in each of these, but they are partnership-based. They require many different departments in coordination to work together to achieve the outcomes. And then we've identified four areas in SONA that are also important to what we need to do, where we may not be the main drivers, but where we will contribute, where we will work together, and where the success of those mandates will impact and support the work we do on trade, industry, and competition. So in the budget vote, we'll convert these ideas into the allocation of resources. Will become more more evident how we're going to be utilizing resources. We'll also indicate how can we use entity resources to make up for the challenge of the budget. How do we get more basically from every bit of the DTIC family? And we'll indicate perhaps a bit more concretely over the next 12 months what are some key milestones or targets that we set. So that's how we've converted SONA and the budget to a broad framework today and then a more programmatic approach by the time we get to the budget vote. So thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity to set out some of our thinking. And of course, I really look forward to any thoughts and ideas from honorable members. That will also help us to shape our own thinking and certainly accountability to Parliament that the future quarterly reports will basically be reflecting many of these themes. You'll hear the echoes of what we've said today as those quarterly reports come out. And you can then give us feedback. Where have we achieved what we've said? Where are we not achieving as well? And that feedback is very important to us. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I'll ask the members to actually take comments, but I think maybe expressing more on what we really need to do on interdepartmental work, because the resources are quite limited. When we actually have a proper coordination across departments, I think we get more value for money. The further point, I think, in the intergovernmental relationship is just we have three spheres of government. And obviously, when you look at local government, there are actually planning spaces. There is actually opportunity to ensure that there's some level of alignment, particularly when we introduce the issue of districts. You might find that we would have to make sure that municipalities form the footprint of the geographic area or space we're hoping to put together and name a district, other than maybe speaking a municipality. I'm just raising it as a point because I haven't actually got to a point of clear sense on how districts link to municipality and how province and national are able to actually align with that. Can I then take hands from members of the committee? I see Carpet, Mulder, and M, Yaku, Tring, Mbuyan, I did say Nerma? Yes, covered, yeah. Okay. And welcome. Jacob actually is a member of this committee. In a way that he visits us quite often, so we might actually have just them to accept him as an additional member of the committee. So can I actually then ask the members to take their comments and all questions?
Thanks very much, Chair. Thank you, Minister, for your address. It's good to hear your plans for the future and gives us an opportunity to engage with it. Just several issues that I would like to raise, you know, some positive, some negative. I think the comment that stuck with me most is that government, we do not run business. He said that I wish you would share that with your colleagues in public enterprises, because I think they need a healthy dose of that. I think, well, government needs to facilitate business and make sure that it's easier for businesses to function. Obviously, meeting developmental imperatives, it's important that government stays out of business. Now, in terms of the ease of doing business, and particularly the rankings that came out towards the end of last year, we have remained in the exact same position. So in 2019, we were at number 84. In 2020, we were at number 84. Two particular rankings that stick out to me is one, starting a business, where we moved down from 134 to 139. And trading across borders, we moved from 143 to 145. Now, I understand with the launch of the Biz Portal that there are things being done to make it easier to start a business. And from what we've been told by investors, hey, it takes you one day to start a business. I would like to imagine that this will obviously be expanded and that as there's a larger uptake, this ranking improves. But I do see a problem with trading across borders, particularly within the context of the AFCFTA. At this moment in time, with the ranking of 145, how can we say honestly to ourselves that we are capacitated to be able to take advantage of this agreement? Yes, we are the most highly industrialized economy, but when you look at the state of our borders, you look at the state of our ports, it makes it very hard to imagine that it's going to be an easy situation to get out. And I would like to see some sort of collaboration between yourselves as well as the Minister of Finance that holds certain functions within the ports and, you know, within borders, to make sure that there is a holistic approach to making it easier, something like a single window, like they have in Singapore, for instance, where everything is integrated and it's much easier for those who are exporting and importing to do their business. And I really do hope to see things in that light. Then in terms of the district development model, particularly in relation to local economic development projects, you will see, and I'll speak from personal experience, in Ekurhuleni there are a number of economic development projects that are standing out. In my constituency there are two things. There is a trading stall in Etwatla, and there's also a business hub in Etwatla. The one cost roughly about 10 million, the other 60 million, and there's no occupancy in these particular projects. Now, what is the channel of command? Do those projects and local departments of economic development fall under the ministry, and what kind of intervention and, you know, streamlining of the process can be put in place to ensure that these projects work? Because surely there's an intention for them to expand employment and the like in the economy, but there's absolutely nothing going on at these projects. You could go there today and you would see that they're unoccupied, they haven't even opened them up. And what kind of, you know, authority does the national department have to say, municipality, you put X, Y, Z money towards this particular economic development project, what are you doing now? Then I think that it's a very positive conversation in terms of the vanadium and the possibility to store mass amounts of renewable energies. I think that's definitely something that could benefit the economy, and I would like to see us investigate that, particularly within the context of IPPs and the like. I think that that can take away reliance from ESCOM, and a step in that direction, you know, may put us in a unique strategic position to take advantage of, you know, further trade with the EU. Then just my second last comment, and that's with regards to the sovereign wealth fund. If you live in the Scandinavian countries, all foreign wealth have a sovereign wealth fund. But when you're running the deficit that we do and you have the intense fiscal pressure that we experience in South Africa, whilst the well-intentioned thing doesn't necessarily mean that we'll be able to implement, do we necessarily have the money without stripping frontline services to be able to facilitate the sovereign wealth fund? And I understand the proposals by Minister Mboweni to fund it, but whether or not the spectrum, you know, bidding and auction continues is another question altogether. Then lastly, when we went to the South African Bureau of Standards and the NRCS, you will notice that there were a series of strikes that were taking place, and there's obviously a bit of labour unrest within the DTR. And I'd just like to find out from you, what is the department doing, you know, to solve this issue? Is this still ongoing? Has it been resolved? And maybe just a, you know, progress update. Because I imagine with budget cuts coming, there's going to be increased pressure on operational expenditure. And I imagine that there would have implications for the staff of the DTR. I would just like to understand where we sit at this moment in time. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Minister, of the department. Yes, I want to congratulate the Minister on his inputs. I think it's much more positive than what we heard from the budget speech last year. At least there's a plan. The main thing is if we can work the plan. Like when McCarthy mentioned the situation of the South African economy, we must take that into consideration. On the other hand, it is so that you can only do what you can do, and this is a very responsible plan that the Minister put forward to the committee. One important thing is I want to mention, in 2008, I served on the Portfolio Committee for Education in the Gauteng Legislature, and we visited Japan, Tokyo, on a skills development study. We visited 16 universities, and I was quite amazed at what I saw and learned. We even visited the Toyota University in Yokohama. Now, skills development is something that, as far back as 2008, was something that was really needed attention to be given in South Africa. Now, that's 12 years ago. And the minister mentioned the importance of skills development, that South Africa should be a skills-based economy. And to be quite honest, I haven't seen much success in the past 12 years in South Africa. My question is, what will change it now? What will make the difference? How are we going to approach it differently so that we develop proper skills to address this issue? You know, with all respect, it's a pity that we still have to talk about racial lines in South Africa. I want to highlight something from the minister's remarks, Honourable Minister, where you said that in the year ahead we will be expanding the number of such enterprises that are supported because transformation itself can be a source of deep and sustainable growth. And we will refine BE implementation to enhance its effectiveness, promoting true broad-based empowerment of workers and communities. The Minister was just please, if you can just explain to me what you exactly mean by, say, because transformation itself can be a source of deep and sustainable growth. What I understand about transformation is, in economic terms, is to translate from poor to rich, from unempowered to empowered, from a situation where welfare is in, as intervention changes into wealth creation. That's how I see economic growth and transformation. But if transformation is from something else to black, it doesn't necessarily mean growth. It just means that it could be lead to a redistribution of poverty, if you understand what I mean. And why I'm saying this, there's a large number of South Africans, skilled South Africans, who cannot find work in South Africa because they are not part of the designated group. They are not included in the BBB program. So now they have to go and work abroad, and we lose that expertise. One of my sons is one of them, for instance. I would like him to be back in the country, but unfortunately there was no opportunity for him, and he had opportunity to go and work abroad. And the interesting thing is that it is in Rwanda, it's an African country, we embrace these people. So my main question is, how are we going to go about to stop losing expertise and implement BBB then?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Minister for sharing the plans of the Department with us in taking the country forward and delivering on the promises of the ruling party. In terms of the ease of doing business, noting the achievements of the Biz Portal towards this end, you know, of making business easier to do, given the opportunities that the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement presents to strengthen the economy, what other initiatives are being planned together with other departments, especially in areas where we note that there are serious challenges, such as moving across borders and, you know, across the continent. Because just having this portal, we might have many business portals across the department to make that business easier to do. Then as far as special development is concerned, and given that this is one of the core areas identified for the DI, the DTIC, changing the Akatek landscape as far as spatial planning is concerned, Minister has told us that we will be doing this through industrial parks. Now, I think we just need to hear how industrial park development will be changing the spatial development of apartheid South Africa that we still see across our country. Then in the ruling party's January the 8th statement, we speak about reducing inequality, and the most effective way of reducing inequality is to create employment and economic opportunities, especially for youth and women. So the minister has undertaken that the quarterly reports will show areas of where the promises you have made will be reflected. But I think we must make a conscious effort to every report that comes in must tell us how we have empowerment, to what extent we have empowered women and youth, so that we track it. You know, it mustn't be a question that must be asked, it must be part of what each area of this department reports on, so that we track it and make sure, because we know that empowering a woman, you're empowering a community. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Good morning. My apologies for having a little bit late. So I caught just a part of your introduction to us. And my comments are much of the same as Sona. Your comments seem to be quite broad and in general, without real proper solutions that we can see now. We've been in democracy since 1994. And we've been saying the same thing. But how does that translate into jobs for the youth now? When you have, as SEZ's, let's say for instance, Port Elizabeth Kuchel, how does that entity translate, that zone translate into direct jobs for the youth in Nelson Mandela Bay? I'm not seeing a real change that's impacting people directly in terms of real and tangible jobs that they can have now in terms of a rate of employment that's at least improving. So for me, it seems that we are mainly talking rhetoric, we're talking about value for money, growth-inducing approaches, but it doesn't seem to translate into what is happening right now. And we can no longer keep saying that we appreciate your presentations because they don't translate into tangible things that we can see. So I would like for you to say, this is what we've done, building on what we've done now, and I'm not talking about industrial parks, I'm not talking about SEZ, but I'm talking about real change that you're making. For instance, you're talking about you want to motivate bigger companies to mentor smaller companies, but how are you incentivizing those bigger companies or reinforcing for them to also pay it forward if you are investing in them? How are you broadening the space of competition in South Africa? How are you broadening the economy space in industries where we know we're lagging behind? And also, in parts, in the ports and ocean space, about the ocean economy, really. We stopped looking at measures and approaches to make sure that we are getting value for money for our ports, that we're getting value for money for what we are importing into this country versus what we're exporting. And lastly, I do think that the DTI house is not in order. So it's very difficult to expect progress from you when we've seen at SABS and RRCS the disorder that is there. When you've seen a lot of talk around the DTI, which means that you're not functioning as a unit. There are some that are better than others. There are state children and there are main children. So I would like for the minister to take a good look at your entities under your department and put them in order without putting politics into it, but actually shaping them up such that they're able to produce what they are meant to produce and are able to deliver what they're supposed to deliver. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies also for coming in late. It appears as if I have fallen off the radar in terms of receiving emails from the department. Hopefully that has been collected. Chair, I think just with regards to the presentation, page 11, and if it has been corrected, then my apologies also, as I said, for coming in a bit late. Page 11 indicates of the presentation that South Africa's trade surplus of Africa declined. Sorry. So we're actually on the speeches. Chair, then I will come in a little later. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Maybe Honorable Kering is paying for the next presentation. Chairperson, let me first welcome the presentation by the Minister. It's welcome, I often, and it gives us as a committee an opportunity to can plan in terms of how are we going to oversight the department, given the fact that they've already alluded to. But I just have some two clarity-seeking questions, Chairperson. I just want to check in terms of the diversification of the sugarcane industry, in chains such as ethanol and stuff. If they're part of the plan, what is it that to the message moving forward? And also check on the backlogs in terms of the LOA and the ICT mod from the NRCS. Because it will also assist us moving forward. The memorandum of understanding between the Competition Commission and the NPA in terms of dealing with the cartels that are around South Africa. Chair, also on the broad-based tourism model for the committee, and for communities and small players. I heard talking about tourism, but I'm not so sure in terms of the broad-based tourism, because there are departments that are cutting across. Will you also briefing in terms of the measure between NEF and IDC? Are we still in line? Are we going to measure it now? When are we moving forward? The ease of business, of doing business, is a cross-cutting issue across government departments. What further initiatives will be doing as a department besides the portal and the registration stuff? The finalization of the infrastructure fund, there's now sovereign wealth fund. How do we integrate those two? How are we going to deal with them all? As also the President has alluded to in the phone in terms of creating 2 million jobs. What annual plans do department have? Progress that seeks to at least assist the department, the President in the resolution that was undertaken by the department. And also, also last one, Chair, I think it will be on the issue of the Nemisa and SANA. They are doing a great job in ensuring that the technical methodology in South Africa and abroad Africa. But in terms of the latest report, they indicated the aging infrastructure and so forth. I don't know whether are you able to assist us, Minister and SANA, so that they are able to assist us in broad registration in terms of the, and also in the endeavor of giving our
African trade agreement with regard to the technology. I think I'll pause now for the thank you, Chair. Relating to the commitments of Minister Nizikin, I also want to compliment the Minister on the plans presented, very straightforward, simple. But I also want to remind the Minister there's this quote of John Lennon, which says, life happens while we make plans. I think I share the sense that we have a good plan going, but the proof is always in the implementation and the capacity. So I think, Minister, we need to see how we can improve our capacity to realize these good plans. I'm particularly interested in the district shared model where government is going, and I think we accept that you're still in the infancy stage of getting that up on the dashboards. I think the key thing for us to measure real is to look at how the township and the rural economy is finding their expression in the shared model. So, for example, if you do a economic study of a region or a town or a district, you'll see that apartheid economic is still alive and well. So, take for example, Overberg, which has a big town like Caledon. Your economic activity is by and large similar to what it was in apartheid. And I think that's a problem in itself, because yes, we've made a lot of plans, but our interventions have not changed both the ownership, but also the management and also the type of activity. So, for example, your SACA account in a rural area is predominantly sold, mainly white. And your micro economy is taken over by mainly your foreign nationals. And I don't want to make a generalization, but many of your South Africans are not part of that economy. So if you look at a model where you have a district economic planning and development, we need to say what is the area of specialization. So, for example, a town might have stock farming or agro-processing as a major contribution to see at the national level. And I think part of the plan must be to see how do we ensure that that gets elevated, just like we do for clothing, just like we do for the automotive industry. How do we ensure that at the aggregate level, at the district level? So I'm quite interested to see, Minister, if there's going to be plans that will take this district economic planning and also monitoring and development, so that we can actually be tangible and say not this broad macro planning process, but actually at a concrete level say this is what's going to happen here in this town. It requires, I know, many coordination between the different spheres of government, and also to ensure that we crowd in investment not only to the big towns, but also to the metros, but also to the rural areas. So I'm hoping for Minister just to give more input into that. Thank you.
Minister, tell me.
Thanks.
You've been the only one that hasn't spoken. Okay, first, yes.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by the Minister. I'm happy with the six core areas of the report of this country, according to the plan of the Minister. I have only two questions. One, Minister, I've heard on SONA the President committed government to create 2 million jobs.
um,
by 2030. What annual initiatives or programs will be undertaken by the department to contribute to achieve this 2 million stops? Lastly, can we have an update on the finalization of infrastructure funds?
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, being from Cape Town, I can't not ask this question. Sikut will be home to the Africa Institute on Space and Science, so, and that is quite amazing. It was announced, I think, in the SONA and the budget. So, as the DTI is responsible for the Space Affairs Act, how will the department support this initiative, this wonderful initiative for the Western Cape? Thank you. Obviously, to support those of the country, but to be hosting it here in at Sikut.
Thank you, honorable members. And maybe there will be just a few areas one would like to comment on. we did pick up the Institute of Space Science did actually indicate that the DTI is responsible for Space Affairs Act. I'm not sure if maybe there's any support by the department in that space. It will be important just to know how how are we doing in terms of that. The other one is just the finalization of the infrastructure fund. I think it will be important just to get feedback on how we're doing on that. The final point, Minister, is that we do have the NRCS and SABS. We had an oversight visit as a committee. Those two entities are having, you know, a strategy to be able to actually revamp and restart again. And it's actually old institutions. And I think last week we had the MESA and SAMAS. They are similar strategies of old institution. I think we may want to actually look at that in terms of engagement, because technical infrastructure of the institution is actually quite a challenge, because on all four of them, we think we can be able as South Africa. I think I agree with the Honorable Member Mbuyane, the support to the African Continent Free Trade Agreement. We may find that those are four pillars of what we really need to look at. But I think we have a minister engaged. There was actually, when we visited organized labor demonstration, we did actually engage with the organized labor. And I think I can say that Deputy Minister Majola did actually engage with myself to follow through. I think we can just see how far he's gone on that, in terms of actually dealing with challenges of labor relation issues and other issues relating to conditions of employment. And I think we'll leave it at that, Minister. Maybe we can then allow you to make comments. I am aware that you should be done by 10:30. That's the time we're actually scheduled. Because you actually didn't have an opportunity, I definitely ask you to say something, Minister. After him, you will be able to proceed.
Quickly, the crackdown on the illegal import of goods, Minister. I know that you've actually been having meetings with particularly our BRICS partners. So could you elaborate, please, on just how we are actually going to close that particular gap on the illegal goods that are imported into the country? Then secondly, the master plan with regards to supporting key performance, how is that rolling out in terms of securing jobs, particularly within the poultry industry, and tie that also to the challenges that we also have in the sugar industry? The master plan for poultry out of rollout, what about the master plan for the sugar industry and actually saving jobs within that particular industry? And then finally, my final question is on the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement. Recent statement by the Secretary of State of the United States indicating that they are going to be having bilateral negotiations with African countries. And I know that this has created a challenge for the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement. What is the department's response to what is taking place, in particular noting that AGOA could be coming to an end in the next 3 to 5 years, I think, and then thereafter it seems as if the USA wants to be going on a bilateral rather than an AGOA trade agreement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the Honourable Members for their questions. I've taken careful note of them, and on my count there are 33 questions. The Chair has given me 15 minutes. I'm not going to be able to split 15 minutes into 32, 33. That would give me 27 seconds per question. So I'm going to do two things, Chair. I think what the questions point to is that on some areas, entities is one area, master plans is another area, where perhaps it would be useful to have specific pre-arranged sessions where I would have a little bit more opportunity to take the committee into my confidence on these areas. You're asking important questions. Each of these questions you've asked about the master plans and the entities are areas that we need to be accountable to Parliament and through Parliament to the South African public, but also there's really interesting things that we'd like to share. So if I could then be much more selective in the areas that I focus on in the available time, I would have loved if there is time to deal with all of them, but perhaps that would be a pragmatic way forward. I think the one thing that comes up from a number of different members of Parliament, honourable members, is different levels of, strength in the language, is to say, broadly speaking, we either some love the plan, others note the plan. The challenge is the implementation capability? Will things actually happen? So that's a cross-cutting issue that comes in many of the different questions sitting on it. And I think that that's something that we need to deal with upfront. So for me, there's two things that strike me when we look at a vision and a plan. The fact that it's consistent with Thurman, it's consistent what we said in the SONA debates in June last year, is a strength. Because when government seeks each time to shift its story and each time to follow fashion and seek to innovate without actually implementing what we've said, then we lose the plot. So the question then is, do we have implementation capability? And I want to take a few examples to illustrate what we're learning from where we recognize we've got weaknesses, because we've got to be open about those, and where we think we've got strengths that we can build on. So some years ago, the challenge was this. There's fierce global competition in building cars. Everyone wants to build cars because it creates good jobs, high-paying jobs. It has a massive multiplier on the economy, meaning other sectors are stimulated, taxes are collected, and so on. And South Africa has a problem that we know all the challenges of development, and we're not going to be able to compete with nimbler, faster competitors who don't have the history and the legacy that we need to deal with. So we knew that if we left it just to each company battling on its own, we will progressively lose our industry as many other countries have done. So we sat down and we looked at what does it take to turn around the fortunes of the auto sector. And working in partnership with what are called OEMs, it's the original equipment manufacturers, it's really a name for all the big auto nameplate makers, Toyotas, BMWs, and so on, we then develop something that says we have a transformation goal as government. And that's now led to more Black South Africans being drawn into the component manufacturing. Maybe I must bring the stories to Parliament, names of people, what kind of things they do, and so on. But we were not happy with it, so we've now created a 6 billion rand fund to really expand that. We said, okay, our market is too small for us to produce all the cars, so let's rationalize. Let's import some cars, but let's aggressively export many cars. Last year, we had the highest level of exports in our history yet. When Chancellor Merkel came here, I looked at the German trade figures. Not only had South Africa narrowed the deficit that we ran with Germany for many, many years, but we were now exporting cars to the heartland of car making, which is Germany. And not only cars, but also components and so on. We then looked at how can we beef up employment in car making. A big assembly plant doesn't employ as many people as we love to, and those are largely they're all multinational corporations. So we said to them, work with us to build component manufacturing, the things that go into the making of cars. And we now have, for every one job we have in a big car maker, we've got two other jobs in making the component. And that component making is now taking place increasingly in South Africa. We're not only making it for cars that are assembled here, we're also selling those components now elsewhere in the world. So we've developed over a period of time a real capability to do things. We've stabilized the industry. We've given the big players the confidence to back small players to accept that more black South Africans, more young people must come into the supply chain. And they've now said, without any enormous pressure, so they said, we will make 6 billion rand available through grants and preferential procurement to deepen this program. And they said to us, you know why we're doing it? Because it also begins to make commercial sense to us. We can see the value of doing these things. Now, I can use probably 30, 40 examples like that. Examples where, by just the discipline of focusing on something and getting it right, that we're beginning to change the storyline. So that's one example of it. Take Kuga as another example, because Kuga came up as a thing. We launched it as a special economic zone. For a number of years, it was relatively small. It was battling. It only attracted small players and so on. Then over the last number of years, we began to focus more on how can we turn around Kuga, make sure that it had a strong management and implementing team, good governance and so on. And then we went around and in our discussions with the People's Republic of China, we ended with an agreement that they would build a major auto plant in Kuga, which is now an anchor project. It's still being built. It's massive. It's like I visited. It's like one of those places that you park these big jet aeroplanes, you know, the big Boeings or Airbuses and so on. And that will be a production base both for South Africa and for exports to other parts of the world, particularly the rest of the African continent, but also we hope beyond that. Now, it took quite a bit of work between the IDC, the government of China, the company called Beijing Auto Industrial Corporation, the local community of Nelson Mandela Bay, the Kuga Development Corporation, the DTIC. All of them needed to bring something to land that contract, and it's now being bought. When they employ, they're going to employ a preponderance of young people. So my Director General, October, went to the Eastern Cape last week, I think it was, and in the discussion that he had with Kuga and the business process service are these back office, when you have a problem with your cell phone or you have a problem with your bank payment, you phone a helpline. Those helplines are like factories. There's like a production operation where there are people sitting with a headphone, a desk, a computer, and they troubleshoot your problems. So South Africa has pitched itself to become a significant player in this field of business process services. We've got an incentive scheme going there. We've got significant numbers of people employed now, many, many thousands of young South Africans that are employed there. And up to now, companies prefer to be in the city centers. We've now got companies increasingly to move out of the city centers into townships and rural areas. In Kuga, as an example, and the question was asked, we think we can get a few thousand young people in a major contract or set of contracts to build a state-of-the-art and to develop and deepen a state-of-the-art call center operation there, providing services across the world and earning foreign exchange for South Africa through an arrangement like this. Now, between a concept and implementation, a thousand things can go wrong. It's the ability of a department to navigate those thousand things, to be able to keep our eye on the ball, to solve each of those that means ultimately people will part with their money and invest a significant sum of their own money in building this, bringing the technology, bringing the customer base and so on. So that's an example we're doing now in many cases. Third example, the clothing industry was in deep crisis, basically losing 15,000 jobs a year in a part of the period between 1996 and the 2009-2010 as South Africa opened to the world. And the industry was unprepared for it. We've launched a competitiveness program there, working with companies, individual businesses, re-engineering, bringing technologies in, training, retraining workers, developing agile manufacturing capability. Today, the industry is broadly stabilized to the point where we think it can now grow. And so the master plan says, in the next decade, we can add 100,000 additional jobs, just over 100,000 additional jobs in clothing and what is called clothing retail, the retail sector that is not government procurement, which goes a different channel, but the clothing that goes to the Foschini's and the Aircons and the Price and so on. Now, to do that is not simply a ministerial statement. Now it means doing a thousand things. Yesterday, I sat with a team talking to the lawyers about the fact that there are containers of confiscated clothing that SARS has confiscated, and the importers now want to take SARS to court. Government will seek a joinder, will seek to be joined in that case, as the department, to be able to show the damage it causes. Now that means that you've got to build and use the capability that you have inside the department to defend the sector, the industry, from the erosion through a growing level of illegal imports. Now, I've given these examples. I've given these examples, and there are many more, and I'd love to have an opportunity to take the committee through them to show what we're beginning to get right. I also have examples where we're getting it wrong, where we've tried some things that have not worked. And it's the ability to recognize where we've done some things that haven't worked, change, either implement better, or drop the plan if it's just not a good plan, and scale up the things that are working well. And that's the heart of our approach. We're not going to come to the committee every time with a new idea. It's going to sound very similar. But what we ask is that we be given feedback on whether what we say we're going to do, whether we're implementing it well. And there are many challenges. When we did the African Continental Free Trade Area, we recognize, honorable members, that the issue of moving goods across borders is going to be an enormous challenge. It's regulatory issues, it's infrastructure. When you go to Bybridge, you'll see what I mean. There are challenges with different standards that apply in different countries on consumer goods and so on. But it's now accepting that those are all the things that need to be done. The big ribbon cutting is when the president announces we've got a continental free trade area. But that's just the beginning. That just says we now agree of where we must get to. That doesn't get us there. The actual hard work of working with labor and business to see which tariff line is to be put up. What is the rule of origin that applies to sugar products? If you buy sweets and you say these sweets or these chocolates are made in Africa, what do you mean? Must it have African sugar also in it? Must it have African cocoa? And that's now what we're doing. So from very big picture, which is what this has to be by the nature of it, the department gets essentially their ministerial directive out of this. They now work on tying up under each of these headings the practical work that must be done. In many cases, it is being done, and I can give you, therefore, a mix of where we're getting it right, as well as the new plans that we want to do, so that we don't only achieve what we have. It doesn't help us to only have 100,000 people in car making, which is the number we have at the moment. It's a big number. Each of them buy food. Much of that food is produced locally. They pay rates to a municipality, which helps to employ the people in that municipality. They buy clothing. We help. Much of the clothing is made locally. They buy furniture and so on. So the multiplier effect of that 100,000 is very significant. Our issue is, how do you double that employment? How do you get a much higher number than what we have now? And so it's to protect the strength and build on it. So Chair, given that I think the questions that honourable members have asked are such good questions, I'm going to request we have an opportunity to go through some of this detail in future sessions. But I want to focus maybe as I conclude with a few specific issues. The first is the district development model. It's not going to be an overnight success, but it's where we're going to invest more. And what it will do, it will take the work that we're doing and it says for every district, what can this district contribute to the country's GDP? What are you good at? Are you good at chicken farming? If you're good at chicken farming, what can national government and provincial government do to support a local municipality? Maybe you can't grow chickens in that area. Perhaps it's a clothing district. Or perhaps it's a place that is beautiful beyond words, where tourism is going to be the main driver. And it's that ability, we're doing many good things nationally, but it's beginning to anchor them in the different districts. That is what the district development model will seek to do. And it will take us about a year and a half to complete all of the districts. We've done three of these now in the first pilot phase. They were the O.R. Tambo district in Eastern Cape. They were the Ethekwini Metro in KwaZulu-Natal. And they were the Waterberg district municipality in Limpopo. So that's where the district development model will go. Eventually, Honourable Jacobs, it will result in a common planning frame. But we don't want to start with planning. We want to start with what are we actually doing in each district already. So we're developing the idea of a single budget, that everything the different government departments do and the three spheres do, let's just put that together and see what does it amount to. Where's the gaps? And so I'm really looking forward to that, being able to ground our work much more as a department and ensure that the national reporting that we have now, you can see the impact locally. I do believe that it is a real impact in many parts of the country. It's the ability to show that, but also to see where's the gaps. Where are we? What are the areas we're neglecting? And do we have the resource base? Which brings me to another thing. And there was wisdom, Chair, in you choosing the topic to be SONA and the budget. SONA sets the vision. The budget gives you your fuel tank. You can only go as far as your fuel tank is concerned. Maybe you can drive differently to use the fuel more sparingly, but you can go on your fuel tank. So we get to show the committee in future sessions how we're trying to use the fuel tank we have to go as far as we need to go. And where, if there's a gap in the fuel tank, we're going to try some new partnerships, some with the private sector, some with organized labor, to be able to go further than we can go otherwise with these things. And then a number of questions came up around the issue of transformation.
I was just thinking if you can make a suggestion on how we continue this engagement with yourself. Maybe we would actually then try and conclude on that and be able to find time and create space for further engagement. Because
absolutely.
I think it's quite crucial. And with the time we have, I don't think it will be fair to actually ask you to actually complete questions. Because I think we can actually then have you with that suggestion, see if members are comfortable, then we can actually then take the next session. What will be your suggestion on how we continue the engagement?
Thank you very much. So there were questions raised around transformation. There were questions raised about things like competition and areas like that. And what I would suggest, Chair, instead of a one-minute reply, which is not going to do justice to the questions raised, if we map out two or three themes out of what has come out here. And we have an opportunity for a focus session with the portfolio committee chairperson on those themes. So master plans is clearly one thematic area. Transformation as a whole is another thematic area that's come up. And we pull these together and we schedule that in the next few months in the work of the committee. That would be, I think, do more justice to it than simply giving a two-minute additional reply. So if the committee is comfortable, if the chair is comfortable with that, I would want to conclude, Chair, with a remark that we've taken note of the 33 points, that I appreciate what I recognize as being across-the-board support, even with the qualifications that some honorable members raised, which is, will implementation happen? But you've all, in some other ways, supported this, and I appreciate that, and I thank you for that. So thank you very much.
We have the 14th of April. It's a APP presentation on your site, Minister. And then we looking at a point of a joint committee, the NCOP and us, and we think it might be quite appropriate, Minister, to be able to actually target that as in that platform. It's April 14th. We're looking at actually a joint sitting, the NCOP and us, National Assembly, to be able to pick up on those issues. I think it's more appropriate. We do have that as our partner, Kasper.
Yeah, I'm going to refer to you as Mbuyani from now on, because you mix up my name all the time.
Well, I always pronounce it correctly.
Chair, I'm happy to do that if we have a settled date going forward for the responses, because I think that it's a bit of a pity to cut the engagement here and that we can't get responses. But there's one pressing matter that I would like to raise, Chair.
Okay. Let me hold you with pressing matter. Let me just get you to second me for the 14th of April first. Then I'll allow you to say anything.
Okay.
Then we can proceed.
Then I want 20 minutes, sir.
Are you agreed?
I'm joking, but yes, I agree.
Okay. It should be small thing, which is comment. Can you make your comment?
Thanks, Chief.
So small comment.
The 14th of March. Chief, it's a very short comment, and that's just relating to the DTR wide strikes, Chair. I think that the committee deserves an update. We did oversight earlier this year, and we found that to be a significant problem. I think it's a pressing matter, and we'd like to have an update on what's going on. If the Minister can give us a brief response on that, it would be greatly appreciated, Chair.
Okay, you see that one on the number, you said 30, say 31, and then you actually have it on the list. Can I ask that the correct time on my side is 10:37. We actually think if we take 45 will be how many minutes? We can take actually 10 minutes break and actually come back again. Yaku?
No, I won't be long, Chair. I just want the Minister to say something we all in principle agree. No, we don't in principle agree. And these are the words that catch us when we debate and have input that is counter what we discuss in the committee. So I do want to register that, no, I do not agree. In principle, I think there's a lot of fault that I see in this report. But anyway, I just wanted to record that for the effort.
So it's just the demonstration of the passion of the discussion we should have, Minister. Thank you, Yako. Can we then, it's 10 minutes break. Can we be back? Can I just say that the one is that we actually have the suggestion of the 14th of April as a follow-up meeting. There actually are other days we can look at, but at this stage, I think what we agreed is 14th of April is follow-up meeting in terms of the discussion we have with the Minister. I think that's what we actually agreeing upon, Minister.
Chair, with your permission, can I just make a very short comment on the question? Given that we now have the 14th of April for the substantial issues. And really just to say that I think a lot of progress has been made. The Director General has been directly involved in the issue of the industrial relations environment at some of the entities. And during the session that he will have on the quarterly report, I would be happy that he updates the committee on this. I will engage further with Honorable Yako. I understand that she has to say what she has to say, but I will look forward in future engagements to fully persuade her of where we need to go. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Can you be back 10-2? 10-2? Can you be back? Thank you.
Okay, okay. Thank you.
let me actually welcome the DGs and the team. And then we will actually then start with the DTI, but it's only from the 1st of April where we'll talk about DTIC. Although we still might be dealing with two reports. Let me actually ask the DG to actually then talk to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, and thank you to the committee members for allowing us to do our third quarter report. As you indicated, this is hopefully the penultimate presentation as we proceed towards the start of DTIC in about 27 days' time. Chair, as you indicated, this is the third quarter report, so it deals with October, November, and December of last year, and this is an update on the quarterly report. As usual, we will the core focus will be our performance as a department, and then our financial performance. But we will kick off just with a economic overview because the context is important. Again, we always put up the slide first because we must know what is our overall goal with all our policies, what is our overarching vision, and that is to create a dynamic, industrial, globally competitive South African economy. And the word, the most important word there is industrial and competitive, and that's why in our mix of industry, we need to also have a strong, what we call, we need to produce sophisticated products as a country, because that's where the value is, that's where the job is, but also that maintains our competitiveness and so on. Just very quickly, as I said, the big report is coming out at 11:30, where the GDP results will be announced by Stats South Africa. So of course, we will get some news later on. But globally, the picture again, since this presentation was produced, as you can see, global growth is projected to be between 2.9 and 3.3%. Across the advanced economies, emerging markets have a slightly higher growth rate of 4.4%. And then the one positive in all of this is that Sub-Saharan Africa is expected to grow 3.3%, which is, as I said, very favorable for us because 30% of our exports goes to the continent. The risks, and it has gotten worse over the past few days, the risk to the global economic output remains on the downside. As I said, because of coronavirus and its spread, it's almost at the pandemic stage. It is now spreading outside of Wuhan, China. It is onto continental Europe, especially settled around Italy, and the spread to South Korea, and it is now taken root in the United States as well. So we expect that there is going to be a very big impact. Central banks are lining up, but we might have to need a stimulus globally because of the impact of coronavirus. But in any case, even with that not there, the geopolitical tensions are increasing, so we expect alongside the tropical storms, the heat waves in Australia and so on, things point to the downside in terms of the global outlook. Turning to the domestic, as I said, in the quarter in last year, we had a contraction of GDP, and as I said, that trend seems to be continuing. There's also been dips in mining, manufacturing, and agriculture, and all those sectors have been affected. If we ask ourselves the question of what is the main factor that accounts for the low growth, and as I said, all economists are differing on their different views, but the consensus is emerging around where the root of the problem lies. And as I said, it lies in this slide, which is gross fixed capital formation, which is another word for investment level. The CFCF is basically the amount, the level of investment by both public sector, government and SOEs, and then private sector investment. And private sector investment has increased. And a private sector investment makes up about 70% of investment, and that has grown by 10.8%. So as I said, all our investment drives, all of our initiatives around that is showing in the figures now you're seeing there's been an increase in private sector investment. The real issue, as we can see, lays also with regards to SOEs, there's been 0.2% growth. So we see a massive reduction in the, as we see our crisis in our SOEs. But the real problem lies in government, local government spending, which is 17.8% decline. Now, as I said, anybody who has studied economics, in terms of Keynes's view, the key driver is the I, is investment. And public sector investment is supposed to be the constant investment, and it's supposed to be there throughout the cycle, government spending, capital spending. And as you can see, with a decline of 17.8% in local government spending, and that is the core of our growth problem we want to argue. And then obviously the low growth is reflected in the reason why we don't have because it's our overall growth rate. Then the positive side again, as the Minister indicated, is that our trade balance is moving for the first time in a long time, is moving to positive territory. Our exports are exceeding our imports. And that shows the work we're doing in terms of the competitiveness of our private sector. Here we just look at the trade balance. And as we indicated, 30% of our basket goes to the continent, but the most strategic importance of the continent is that that basket is 90% manufactured products. So that is why we attach so much importance to the continental free trade area. But we do face a long-term sustainability challenge, and as you will see there, for that quarter alone, we exported come to it here with a trade surplus, but you will see I think it's about 80 billion of our exports to the continent, but we imported only 30 billion. So we have a massive surplus with the continent. And as you know, in time is going to arise the same issue as China, where other countries will complain, we only buy your products, we're not even going to buy our products. So, but as I said, but on the whole, for our job perspective, we are, as I said, because if they don't buy our products, then we'll be buying Chinese products and other products. So it is very important that we maintain intra-Africa trade. Chair, I'm not going to go any further because the results will be coming out shortly, and then by that time we will be having a discussion. But as I said, the picture on the private side is looking positive, with both investment levels rising and exports rising, but the problem is spending at local government level is declining by over 80%, and that is the cause. And that's why the district development model is so important that the President is launching, is to deal with the problem at source and stimulate investment in infrastructure at local level. So turning to our key program, as you know, the heart and center of the DDI strategies around industrial development. And that's the first one we will deal with. If we take it firstly, the clothing sector. As the Minister indicated, we've completed this master plan, but also in this period under review in the third quarter, we started to focus on the cotton industry, because as you know, South Africa does have a indigenous cotton industry centered around KZN. And we then, for the first time, we held a cotton indaba so that we can bring attention to our local industry. And we reached an agreement that from the retailers that they will first buy up all of the South African produced cotton, and then they will stop the imports of cotton. So that was a significant achievement in November last year. Secondly, as you know, we tried to create
demand for locally produced products. Again, Mr. Price, retail, committed to extra 30 million to small-scale farmers, again, to buy a local production. And Mr. Price has put money into it. And it's a change in Mr. Price's overall strategy, because, as you know, they were the first ones to go abroad to bring in products into the country. And then we completed the master plan at the investment summit in November. Similarly, we focused on the labor-intensive sectors. The poultry industry plan was also signed off in that month. And as you know, we obtained a commitment from the poultry industry for a 1.7 billion of investment in that sector, where we're going to expand production, increase employment, and so on. Similarly, we got a commitment from the Sugar Association, which you interacted with, and thanks to the committee for the ongoing and constant support to the sector. I think we are hopefully going to get to a stage where we have consensus with everybody, but they've committed 1 billion in terms of transformation in small-scale farmers. If we then turn to, as I said, a big focus of our work was the lead up to the conference, was the Africa Industrial Development. We've completed now, we've established with the SOEs, because Transnet, many of our AXA is doing a lot of work on the continent. We've got a steering committee set up led by DPE, where we finalized our list of projects, because the key thing with that, with the continent, that we can't just export our products. We must also invest in on the continent so that we produce there, employ people in other countries as well, so that we can have intra-Africa trade, intra-Africa investment, and so on. Then we've also completed the list of mining projects for the continent, where we can help to build and supply the mining equipment used in the mining industry in the DRC, in Tanzania, and so on. Then, as the minister indicated, the big drive, we think, which can facilitate youth employment is business process outsourcing, and also in the nature of technical issues. We've now designated, this is our localization, we now have about 27 products that we've designated for the where government and SOEs must buy locally produced products. We've added batteries and medium volt switchgear, signed off, and it was signed off by the minister in that quarter, and as I indicated, that brings the list to 27 products we've now designated. Similarly, what we've done work in the pharmaceutical and medical devices, we've established the first manufacturing lines with Metex, which is latex and nitrile gloves, and then BioVac, very important, this is a producer, local manufacturer of vaccines, an advanced facility, and we've managed to save this company, which was about to go under, by providing, by interventions with Treasury and Department of Health. We've been able to get a contract with Department of Health for them to supply 3 years for vaccines. Cosmetic industries, we're working with SABS in terms of the Dignity campaign, sanitary towels, that's for getting SMMEs to be able to produce sanitary towels, but also we launched the big Procter & Gamble facility, the American company, $300 million investment, making the always fads in South Africa. Plastics, the same, good progress. Polypropylene facility, this is also localization, was never produced before in South Africa, supplying Volkswagen, it's been established. The new polyethylene terephthalate plant, $800 million, and then this is really the important one, high-density polyethylene fuel tank, which we're making in East London for Mercedes-Benz, but also globally, we will be exporting these supply tanks for the vehicles made from locally produced material. We turn to under industrial development, just our incentives, or stimulants as we call them. These are things to stimulate manufacturing, and it's our contribution to the private sector to turn them. We have clear conditionalities for our incentive. You must produce locally. You must expand local content. You must employ locals and young people. You must do empowerment and so on. So there's the figures. 135 approvals, projected value of 2.8 billion. And that is our incentives.
I think you did get a full detailed incentives report where we go with our different incentives. This is just the high level overview. Turning then to trade, investment and exports, if we just very briefly comment on some of the issues. Our biggest event was the Binational Commission of China, and I think Honorable Trinh then asked about some of the interventions we made there with encouraging China to really stop this under sending under invoice products into our market, dumping products here and so on. We're working with China to rebalance the trade relationship where it isn't just a raw material for manufactured products, but they need to take some of our manufactured products and they need to reduce the level of illegal exports and so on. So that was the Binational Commission and also a joint project. As you know, we've got some really important joint project. As was mentioned, the 12 billion rand bike investment, which is a new automotive plant in Kuha, and we do those things under the Binational Commission. Then there was the South African-Iran Joint Commission. As you know, we have major investments in Iran, not only from Iran, the telecommunications network with MNET, but there are also some other investments, so that roadmap for South Africa-Iran Joint Commission. Then we have one with, which I'll come to later, but some of the Central European economies. Then turning to the other significant achievements was, of course, the Brexit issue, which was causing great concern. So in that quarter, we put in a lot of work to take out the insurance policy with regards to that. If there is a hard Brexit, we would be protected in terms of access to the UK market. And we did achieve the UK SACU trade agreement, put a lot of effort into it, but it was concluded on the 9th of September, which basically expanded. And I think the good thing about this relationship with the UK now is that we're able to grow our traditional and historic partnership with the UK because they've allowed that they are not as protectionist on agricultural products as the rest of Europe. And they've allowed us more wine quotas and they've allowed us more agro-processed products into their market. So we want to really build on this UK South Africa partnership. And we did the first round by an insurance policy. So whenever Brexit happens, we are covered. We will still have a free trade agreement with duty-free and quota-free access. Well, not completely quota-free, but bigger quotas into the European market. We also have the BRICS contact group, and this is again where we again reinforce this issue of under-invoicing with China especially. And then we had the joint South Africa Czech, and then with Slovakia. And as I said, these are important markets emerging is in Central and Eastern Europe. Turning then to transformation and special economic zones. As you know, in the quarter there in November, we launched the Chuanli Motive SEZ, where we, as I said, this is now a new partnership between 33% owned by DTIC, 33% owned by Gauteng government, and 33% owned by Chuanli Metro. And I'm pleased to report from our last board meeting, there's 18 new component factories will be established. We've completed now phase one of the park. It's fully subscribed. We are immediately going into phase two and phase three of the park because of the successor program. Also, the Gauteng approved the immediate release of the 200 million to build the bulk infrastructure for the park. So that project is on course, but as I said, the deadlines are tight because by June we must be fully into laying out the bulk infrastructure, and then, as I said, by the next year, June, we must go into production for the extra 1,000 Ford Rangers we must produce. But the positive progress, and that initiative was launched in the quarter. Then we've had our road shows, as I said, on SEZs. As we're taking on SEZs, we went to Monaco, Zimbabwe, Monaco and Spain. Then we've worked with small enterprise development where we're putting effort into, let's say this is the youth employment, what's available, the digital hub. We also had a hub launched with Microsoft in Mandeni, in Isitele, where, as I said, we're working on this concept of building activities for young people in the special economic zone. And then the youth initiative, 96 company registration through the youth digital portal, 9,845 jobs created. I just wanted to, on this issue, and I'll come back to later to the special economic zones. If we then also, whilst we're under transformation, the other program that we have is what is called the equity equivalent. This is for foreign multinationals that cannot do BEE directly. We signed our MOA on a very a comprehensive agreement with Amazon because they are opening two or three new data centers, and part of that is equity equivalent, where they will promote and incubate black businesses into that program, and also training for young people and so on. We also completed in this year under review what the minister mentioned was the 6 billion fund. This fund is signed off. The following companies have all signed up to it: BMW, Isuzu, Toyota, Mercedes-Benz, VW, Nissan, and Ford. They've all signed. We've signed all those agreements. This money will only be used for black industrialists in the entire auto value chain, from component manufacturing to panel beaters to dealerships to the retail side of the business, the manufacturing side of the business, and so on. But very good progress on those ones. We can see some of the companies are doing well. As you know, the scare we had about General Motors leaving South Africa, Isuzu bought General Motors. We met with them last week. Production has gone up 50% at the Isuzu plant. They used to produce 20,000 vans and trucks. They produce 30,000 now. So it is really positive that they're also bringing black industrialists into the supply chain. We hope in the next month or two they will be signing the contracts with the black industry. Then you know it is really implemented, as was the discussion earlier. Then we made 15 interventions in support BIs. Again, on the black industrialist program, the point was making, we cannot guarantee the success of any business, including a black business, but we can make intervention to support them as much as possible, and those are the kinds of interventions we made. And then, as I said, we this is a very important one, but I also, we've been going around the country, and I've personally gone to the Eastern Cape last week, and then I was in KZN the week before, but visiting Isakeni, visiting Mandeni, Isitebe, and here we're trying to work on this, as I said, getting activity going at the district and the local level. And this is one of the programs we were just seeing, that the groundwork is laid properly for the Microsoft Digital Hub in this area. But lots of work was done because services have declined significantly in terms of municipal level water, electricity, and so on. And we really need to get a link going between what we're doing in terms of the master plans and the SEZs, and what is the government being able to deliver the basic bulk services for businesses. As everybody can see what's happening in Ladysmith in Isakeni, where Sumitomo Rubber, a big investment we announced last year, they've had 3 days they've closed down because of protests about local services. Then turning to the final area, as I said, the core focus was industrial development, investment, export. And then finally, it's legislation and regulation. We have conducted 7 education workshops in the following provinces: Gauteng, Northwest, Eastern Cape. As I said, right from the Companies Act to the Consumer Act to the liquor, the gambling. But we're trying to raise consumer awareness around that legislation. And
And then finally, Chair, as we reach foreclosure, turning to administration and combination, as I said, we need to build, we're building for the future. We're trying to build a dynamic professional administration, and those are again our stats. Again, women in senior management positions is again 54%, and we really hope to build this this far consistently. We've also a number of people with disabilities, which we pay a lot of attention to, at 4.1% above our target. And again, all creditor payments made within 30 days, and as I indicated, the bulk of them paid within 15 days, so we've maintained the administrative track record. If we then turn to the, Chair, I'm not going to go through the rest, but basically here is a more detailed breakdown, and I've given you the highlights of it. I want to maybe just address then the two issues before concluding, just for financial performance. I think, as you will see, and you know, the DTI budget with our 13 entities, it's a 10 billion budget. So far, we've spent just over 6 billion, but there's no cause for concern because, as you can see, the variance of what we were supposed to spend and what we did spend is a variance of less than 1%. So I think we're on track with our spending, so hopefully we will finish this quarter, which will be completed in the next 28 days. We should be on track to maintain our variance at below 2%, and that we won't have underspending in the department. I'm not going to go to the committees now familiar with this, but this then just lays out in more detail the variances and so on, but I think we need to say territory. Chair, I wanted to just go and conclude with 2 points. The one is the SAVS issue, which again I want to thank the committee for the visit earlier a few weeks ago. And for, as I said, for helping us to put NRCS and SAVS on the agenda, and because we want to place them under administration, we've got turnaround strategies. As I said, labor relationship is a difficult area, but thanks, you've engaged with labor, and then our ministers and deputy ministers also had an engagement with labor. They've asked us to give attention. I've spent about 2 or 3 full days. They've asked us to mediate now, because as you know, this relates to the entities. They have a collective bargaining forum. It's mainly centered around SANAS, NRCS, and SABS, where the industrial action has been. They see DTI, both parties, the entities and the labor, have seen DTI, and they've called us to be the mediator. So I'm now chairing the collective bargaining forum. We have, as of last week, they've ended the strike, they've gone back to work, but also most of the entities had implemented the wage agreement of between just, I think, 6.3% was there, because the public sector one, and they implemented it in last year, because most of the staff, the plant level, agreed to it. We've now reached in principle agreement by both the employer and the union on settling that will be the wage level. They'll agree to it. So in principle, as I said, it was in principle agreement. Everybody agrees that will be the settlement. So everything should be okay. But as you know, in these matters, those of us who have been in this space before know we are now having to sign the actual written agreement. When I left on Friday, we've set up a five-a-side committee between the employer reps and the union reps, and we put the legal team together, and they will be finalizing the in-principle agreement. And hopefully in the next week or two, we will then sign the actual agreement in writing. But as I said, we've had to spend a lot of time because as you know, with weak management comes a weak labor. Two always go together. A well-run organization, as a, and as I said, the conflict has been also at those entities. And then also just on our successes with the SEZ program, as I said, we're trying to build some case studies of success so that we can have role models for the struggling entities. I've given the report on the Tshwane SEZ, where, as I said, we've got the 18 investors who have signed. And so we will be building 18 factories. As I said, we've just appointed the CEO from the 1st of March. So the team is in place, meeting at the Ford plant. So that is done. But then also the other one we must build on is Kuga, is the figures that I think was asked. So currently what we have is we've got 45 investors now in Kuga, which is really the best performing business in the country. 45 investors from being a white elephant about 5 years ago. There's 8,016 construction jobs were created. There's now 7,815 operational jobs in the manufacturing companies. And then there's 1922 young people in the call center. 1922. So the question about that's why the minister said we think we must roll out this model of using the call centers and the global process outsourcing for youth employment. And we want to, we that's why we took all the other SEZs, we had Saldana, Maluti, all of them, Oar Tambo, Richards Bay, all of them, we had a seminar with them last week in PE. So we took them and showed them these call centers. And as I said, there's 1,900 people employed in these call centers, all young people. They've trained, Kuga has trained 7,406 young people. This is because we've established this a full-time training center within Kuga. And 33% of the spend has been on SMEs. So we want to use this. As I said, it's not the figures. If you go to other SEZs, if you go to Morocco, they've got 100 investors in the SEZs. You know? So we've got to see the level of ambition we're trying to say we must create, but at least we've got one. We've got the three. Dubai Trade Port is London, and Kuga are shining examples of what can be done if you get a strong management team in place and you also get a strong board in place to ensure that there's good governance. Chiron, that note, I want to conclude and thank you.
You did quite well. You 30 seconds later. But I'll try to actually say we'll proceed to the EDD. We're giving 30 minutes per presentation and hoping that we can have an hour for members to actually engage with the input. So I think it's an hour with departments and then hour with the members. DG? EDD.
Okay, well, let's just check if it is on. Okay. Chairperson, thank you very much, members of the PC, as well, colleagues who are present here. Chairperson, the presentation, the hard copy that is in front of you, you will see that it might look very fuzzy, but I would actually suggest that I actually deal with about 20% of those slides. We have about 40 slides, meaning that I'll actually go through about 10 slides. And I'm hoping that those 10 slides will actually help us empower ourselves to understand what actually happened during that specific quarter. What I would actually also do to happen there is that the approach will actually to give effect of what happened in the quarter without expressing any bias on any specific aspect. If you look at the content, approach a person where I say the first slide, I will take only one slide there. I'll actually ask if Lenja to speak to that, because I do want it to be able to ensure that, that themselves they take ownership of the areas that they work in. Now, the highlights that are listed there, those highlights, what you notice, Chairperson, is that we pick a theme in a quarter, and that theme in this specific quarter was about the infrastructure. And I will actually talk about those initiatives that we actually provided, which are practical supportive work that is actually done around those specific ones. Now, then you will have C there, that is say the KPI. Right, KPI mainly, Chairperson, is the unblocking of the of work done for economic development that in the local economies, and of course it will be under those identified what we can job drivers, maybe the sector, maybe specific projects. Now then, the last two, right, are mainly the financial performance of the department. I include there the human resource, because it is a cost intensive activity, right, in the department. I'll actually ask the CFO to actually to speak to that. Len, if you could just deal with the economic context, Chairperson, you will not go into details about it because it's the same economy, right? Of course, we shall keep those slides that are put in context of what we are about. And my colleague, Lionel, did talk to this. All right, Len.
Thank you,
DG.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members. I think, did you guys see? Thank you. I think given that the DTI presentation covered a lot of the economic context, so I'm going to be quite brief. Just bearing in mind that as I speak, the GDP result is coming out. I'm quite bad at doing two things at the same time. So I think I might get an SMS or someone else might get the result, but it's supposed to come out at 11:30. So that would be the GDP result for this particular quarter that we're actually talking about, which is October, November, December of 2019. So really just to pick up some key things, I think the one thing to add to what was in the DTI presentation is that if you look at global growth in 2019, it really was the worst year of economic growth for the global economy since the global financial crisis. And I think that's important to keep in mind for the fortunes of the South African economy as well, which as members know is inextricably linked to that global economy. So just to pick that up, there was some trade statistics in the DTI presentation. We've had a positive trade balance overall for the last 3 years now, so 2017, 2018, 2019. And there are two elements that I think are quite interesting about our trade performance. The one is that, you know, when I was studying economics, which is initially, which is quite a way back now, you know, we always used to read about the balance of payments constraint to South African growth. It's quite a mouthful. And what that meant was that as the South African economy started growing rapidly, import demand would increase because we weren't making things locally. Kind of acts as a constraint on growth, and we sort of veer down again. And that's changed. That's as DG has mentioned, as the Minister has mentioned as well, as we successfully pursue a strategy of local industrialization and essentially import substitution, that balance of payment constraint becomes less of a factor. We have a little bit less imports to constrain us, and of course, as export performance remains in line with our GDP growth, it really gives us the possibility of more sustained trade balance surpluses. And what's particularly important to flag, and the DG mentioned as well, is the importance of our trade with the rest of Africa. Now, in the DTI presentation, they were giving quarterly values, and that's perfectly fine. But I think that underestimates estimating how important it is. Our trade balance is a positive 200 billion annually with the rest of Africa. That matters. Our exports to the rest of Africa have gone from about 170 billion in 2010 to 350 billion last year. And the crucial point is the composition of those exports, which is much more of a sort of supporting our own manufacturing strategy, of course, as well. And what's just the final little flagging on the trade is there are specific, when you start playing around in the trade statistics, there are great success stories, and trucks and buses and that kind of export to the rest of Africa is an incredibly exciting story. I don't know if members know that South Africa is the main supplier of trucks and buses to the rest of Africa globally. So in other words, we outperform Japan, they're second, and we outperform Germany as well. And just truck and bucky exports in 2019 were about 13 billion rands worth of exports in South Africa. Right, so just to add a few points there to what was mentioned in the previous presentation as well. In the DTI presentation, you'll see they went up to Q3 2019, so calendar Q3 2019. This is calendar Q4, or in other words, financial year Q3, October, November, December. Sadly, that quarter gave us the same unemployment rate as the previous one. We've had two consecutive quarters of 29.1%. If we look at it over the whole year 2019, it's a disappointing year because we are certainly struggling to accommodate the rate of new entrants into our labor force. That's why our unemployment rate remains high. But unfortunately, in 2019 as well, we actually saw job losses in the economy, which gave us, you know, if you take from December 2018 to December 2019, so that 12-month period, we've seen a 2 percentage point increase in the unemployment rate from 27.1% to 29.1%, which is, I think by any standards, a disappointing result for all of us. We have some statistics, so just some basic numbers also from the quarterly labor force survey on job results by industry, and then on the next slide by province for the quarter, for the year. I'm not going to go through them. I'm going to, rather if there are questions to unpack it, just I'm sure that one's been trying to give some analysis of that. So with that, back to you, Lisa. Thank you.
That slide is the slide with, it speaks for itself, right? It is about the results of the financial governance that were released by the Auditor General in that quarter, not necessarily why it's about that specific quarter, but it was released in that quarter, and it actually shows the second consecutive year, right, for 2018-2019, after the other one that was expressed for 2017-18. The department in that specific quarter is actually received a certificate of excellence from the Auditor General for achieving that status. In the main, this actually speaks to the value for money processes within the department. That is what that expresses. Now, but if you look at the second highlight of the year, remember the theme that I spoke about is about the infrastructure. Now, you'll remember, and the members will remember that the department had launched the PPS, the price preference system, in the steel industry to actually to promote beneficiation in the downstream of that economy. Now, but we have struggled for 6.5 years because this attempt to actually to introduce the export tax, which we believe is more efficient than the measure that we have, right? It was initially launched in September 2013, and now it's 6.5 years down the line that we've been wanting to introduce this measure. Now, the members, Chairperson, will remember that, you know, during the quarter, the third quarter, we really stepped up our effort engaging with the Treasury, because here it's a collaboration effort between ourselves as the department, which is actually directly participating, observing and monitoring the industry, and also working with the Treasury, which has got the responsibility of actually promulgating the text. Right, so we have to, at all material times, to engage between ourselves. But for some reason, we've been having different views on this matter, but it's good to say that, in that quarter, we actually managed to actually to read from the same page, hence the Minister of Finance, actually, in his speech, he actually made the comment that I'm quoting in there, Chairperson. Now, when will that be effective, right? It will actually depend on the parliamentary process to actually to come up with the annual taxation laws amendment B, the TILAC. And we do believe that when that actually happens, it will actually go a long way, right? Because we know the pressures of the steel industry that we have, due to the state of our infrastructure and also the impact that we have on the construction. The next highlight, Chairperson, is a special development highlight in the township and also in the rural area. Now, the point here, Chairperson, is that as a department, we've actually put in place. Remember that this phenomenon of a township and rural area, it actually, there is no consensus of what it is. Right? It's important to say that we actually have a framework like that that actually defines, right, for ourselves, for our own purposes, what that what we mean when we actually talk about that. That framework is a framework that will actually assist ourselves. Now, there are two frameworks that are put in place there, right? Is that one of the township, which is championed by the Deputy President, right? And there is also what we can there, the social economic policy framework. Now, that is important to be able to understand how do we begin to address the reduction of poverty and unemployment. Right. Now, of course, the areas, that is the districts, as we were saying, as the minister was saying here, that the districts or localities, they have got different competitive advantages. Now, which you need to be able to say, how do we ensure that those strengths are actually exploited, right, as you try to reduce your poverty and your unemployment. Now, we have got a team, a task team that is actually a multi-party task team that is actually set up, which is actually coordinated by the EDG. Now, some of the strategies that are there, I'm making examples, right, you will see that those strategies are strategies that are intended to ensure, because we are also speaking about the industrial park. Industrial parks need to be able to ensure that they are integrated to the local economies in those specific areas. Because if that happens, it will actually go a long way to actually to jack up those local economies. One of the strategies that we have there, we speak about the grocery retail market inquiry, right? There we're talking about the remedial action. One of the challenges, Chairperson, that you would remember we have there is the level of competition between our, if you take the foreign businesses and our local. Right? Now, that inquiry, if you look at the remedies there, right, if those remedies were to be implemented, they'll go a long way to actually to address that lack of competitiveness in our what in our local economy. One of the things that we intend to do is actually to roll out as a strategy the implementation of those that grocery retailer market inquiry and also the data market inquiry. The fourth highlight, right? That fourth highlight, Chairperson, is actually talking about what is this platform, which is called Public Budget Facility for Funding Infrastructure, right? Remember that, Chairperson, that I think last year, right, we did update the portfolio committee about phase one, which we call window one, and also window two, which is a platform that is actually there to make of capturing all the key long-term projects. The Treasury does have a portal where they actually capture all the requests that the departments are actually making to finance infrastructure. Those are MTEF-based portal. But what we speak about this platform is more long-term. You'll see the examples when they're in the next slide, which will give. Those are long-term, others will be 10 years, 15 years timelines, time frames of those projects. But now to implement a project on that bank is critical that it must be technically sound, which is what this facility does, because behind it, there are water tanks, joint technical committee, which is actually made up of officials within the National Treasury, officials within the department, officials within the PICC. Right? PICC, remember, Chairperson, it's a technical capability that we have in actually managing the major projects ourselves. In that quarter, Chairperson, quarter three, you will see that about 42 large projects were actually applications for large fund projects to be funded were actually submitted. In that quarter, if you look at it, Chairperson, you will see that we actually supported and recommended the funding by the Mincom Board. Remember, the Mincom Board actually sits around October. In the last October, we're able to support and recommend five of those projects. Those projects are listed here at the bottom, and we may all be aware of them in one way or other. The Gauteng Schools Program, the Diepfontein Hospital, Hegerberg Hospital, and those related projects, which is about the gas generation as an alternative to the electricity. Now, that is a project that went through that platform, and it's one of the projects that was actually ultimately decided to be funded. But look at the lessons that facility actually provides. Now, Chairperson, you remember that we are at this point in time having an infrastructure fund, right, which will be funding special key projects, right, which are large. Now, what we have actually done is that the department, through the PICC, through that facility, they are actually supporting the presidents, right, in the rolling out of the infrastructure under that fund. But one of the reasons why we had to do this, look at the challenges that we have as a country, Chairperson. If you were to track what actually happened during the investment conference, a number of departments submitted a long list of projects that they say they would like to participate in the conference. Not only the national departments are also talking about the province, I talk about local. But the weakness of that process was that you will see that there was planning which actually shows that there was not well thought through price in those projects, which is one of the challenges that we have about large projects. The packaging, that is the preparation of the project. One of the things that we really, because of the challenges of capacity, in packaging projects, we do have challenges. But now, with this facility that we've put in place, now that problem is no longer a problem, it's something of the past. Now, which we really do hope that, if you look at that slide, which is the fifth highlight, now there, the highlight that we are making is that we have actually built capability. In fact, we are participating in assisting the Department of Public Works, because that function now has actually moved to Public Works. Right? But because we wanted to ensure that the capability that we have actually put, we have built over some time now does not get lost, during this quarter, we have actually engaged to a great extent with the Department of Public Works for them to be able to take that technical capability forward. What the department actually did there was actually look at how to human resource the rolling out of national priority projects. And also, how itself, because taking over that responsibility of infrastructure, how itself should actually be resourced and prepare itself to take over that responsibility. Now, where we are sitting, I can safely say that we are in a stage where that facility, that capability, it will successfully be implemented within the Department of Public Works, and we think that even the president, when it runs with that infrastructure fund, itself to be able to do that. Now, Chairperson, just the last slide that I wanted to speak to is the overall performance of the department, which is reflected there, but in it, what I want to zoom in is what happened in quarter three. Now, we targeted about 183 products there, but in that quarter, we targeted about 43 products. We planned to achieve 43 products, but we actually achieved 54. Well, somebody might say that there are 11 extras, but now, what that means, it actually has an impact on the spending, on the budget that we actually plan. Now, because this is the third quarter, you would think that the spending would have been 75%, but in actual fact, it was 78%. Now, Chairperson, the areas that have actually been hard for us as a department, that's why there is that access. Is we had to conduct an investigation in one of our entities, right? And these investigations, they actually take, we have to use the legal firms to actually to deal with that, and that is the sign of pressure that we actually had in that specific one. What I would actually ask the Chairperson in the next 5 minutes, right, you should deal with the finances of the department, right? And I will also ask the CFO to actually to deal with that. Stefan.
Thank you, Chair. If I can quickly move the members to slide number 51. on the HR, and that slide, what we're trying to show is that if you look at the average spending for the department, it has actually gone down, and the reason for that is to reflect a number of resignations which came from senior positions. I won't be long, I'll just walk through them and I'll take questions as they come. Okay, and then the second slide, slide number 52, members, you'll see that the impact of some of these senior positions, senior members leaving the department, is that we're now sitting with a 50-50% in terms of employment equity. Our entire staff complement is currently sitting at the end of the park, where a small department is EED. All right. Okay. And then the next slide, people with disabilities, these are just the steps. People with disabilities, so that slide hasn't actually changed. We still have 3%, which is a total number of 3 people within the department, 1 male and 2 female, which is above our national target of 2%. Chairperson, I will now quickly go through the finances. The finances on slide number 55. Slide number 55, as the DG was explaining, you would expect that by Q3 we are sitting at 75%, but we are at 78%. And the fact that the DG was explaining the issue of the investigation that we had to do, that is an investigation that was not planned by the department. It was requested by National Treasury, so that results in us having an extra spending. However, that 78% includes the department spending, which is within our budget, and it also includes our transfers. The transfers are the ones that actually also contributed to that 78% because our transfers are not done on a straight line basis. So you will see that for the actual spending for that quarter versus what was actually expected, we spent a 96% as a department in that slide. And I'm explaining where that difference of 4% which you didn't spend in Q3 came from in the next slide. Having taken the members quickly to the second slide, which is slide number 56. On that slide, you will see that 28% is actually mainly those transfers that I'm talking about, which are not necessarily on a straight line basis. But however, as a department, we had 67%. Even though we seem to be slightly below, however, we're slightly below because of the understanding on our compensation of employees. However, on the goods and services, we are slightly above because of the forensic, the legal expenditure that we had to incur as a department. The last slide, Chairperson, the one that I want to explain. The Tirisano Fund, Chairperson, we have a slight understanding on the Tirisano Fund, and the reason for that is the transfers that we make to our trust administrator, the IEC, comes with conditions that the companies need to have paid money into the NRFS before we are able to make any transfers. We've had members know about the book fund, and that's so we now have 2 additional companies that are in financial difficulty, Stefanucci and Aben. So as a result, that transfer of 20 million which we are not able to make as a department. We have been able to correct this as part of our adjustment budget, which we got the approval in January. So that difference will not be you will not see it come quarter four or come year end. Chairperson, those are the finances.
Chairperson,
yes,
has the promise that I said is results will actually be released now. You will see that the growth is actually 0.2. It means that there has been a decline. Remember that in 2017 it was 1.4, and 2018 it was 0.8 growth. Now it's 0.2, which actually means that there is a sliding into a deficit by about 1.4%. That was just information.
Thank you very much, Teaching. Can we then actually go back
Chair, I earlier jumped the gun, so let me get back to where I jumped. It was maybe page 11 of the report. The third quarter for DTI.
Okay, we'll start with the DTI. I'm not sure if ever you'd like us to do DTI and then come back and do, or maybe combine both. Okay. No, you can actually then pick either cost or train.
Thank you, Chair. It indicates on page 11 that we had a trade surplus. The trade surplus of Africa declined, but if one looks at the graph, it seems as if there's actually a growth in the surplus. You know, you're looking at quarters 1, 2, 3, well, particularly 2 and 3, looking at the green line, it indicates that there was a growth, that surplus of Africa declined, should not have been the other way around. Secondly, Chair, the page 18 speaks with regards to our the trade deficits. Just wanting to make a comment with regards to the trade deficits, particularly with our BRICS partners. What is the process and progress, and I've raised this before with regards to beneficiation. For a large extent, we are still exporting raw materials, whereas we could be growing the economy, particularly on the industrial side, if we take into consideration the positive benefits of that beneficiation could actually have. So I'm wanting to know how far have we come. I know the minister, the last time I asked this question, did say we've improved platinum, looking at beneficiation there. By the way, with the platinum, are we also then looking at beneficiation with regards to batteries for your electric car? And again, also the question is, what is the progress in that particular direction? It could be a game changer. Chair, my other concern with regards to the department is the intergovernmental communications, in particular local government. 2018, I visited one of the industrial economic nodes in Etiquini. The management of those nodes complained, where some of the big companies had put up in their factories solar panels, looked at rainwater harvesting. They were told, you cannot do that because you do not have licenses. Now, some of our municipalities are not performing adequately with regards to utilities, particularly with regards to water, the provision of adequate provision of water and electricity. Now, where your companies and your industries in particular want to ensure certainty in those areas, but we provide stumbling blocks. And we are certainly pleased with the pronouncements made by the President with regards to electrical generation, electricity generation by your local municipalities. Question again is, how far have we come? Do we still have, at a local government level, do we still have some stumbling blocks where your local municipalities want to secure their income, because most of the municipalities are dependent on income from water, sale of water and electricity in particular. And then maybe just with regards to DTI, final question is we have a leverage of some 1:3.61. That is the leverage that was indicated, I think it was on page 16. But that leverage seems to fail. Looking at the budget of the leverage, we are failing to generate the required jobs for, and I don't know whether my statement is true or not, but my impression is that we are failing to generate the required jobs, looking at that particular leverage of 1:3.61 per rand. How do we then turn that around, ensuring that we get, whether we can boost the leverage, improve certain efficiencies along the way, so we actually get a better, what they call it, bang for buck. Chair, then with regards to the EDD presentation, I've made mention with regards to the platinum batteries for electrical cars, but it seems as if we have a double whammy, page 7. on page 7 of the EDT report, labor force increased by 478,000, but the number of jobs decreased by 108,000. And it's certainly concerning. We do have some large number of investment that goes into from EDD in terms of turning the economy around. But again, it just seems as if whatever we are doing is not enough. An interesting report by the CDE, the Center for Development and Enterprises, and again, I'm putting this out there. With regards to whether the focus should actually be on, you mentioned the challenge of township rural development, whether the focus should be on township rural development or whether the focus should be on city development, seeing that in the next few years a greater portion of our population will actually be living in cities. Now, I argued this with Anne Bernstein in that we cannot, there has to be both. But sometimes we focus so much on township rural development, but our cities are actually falling apart. So how do we actually strike that particular event? And then maybe finally, Chair, or penultimately, the effect of malls on the decimation of our SMEs. How do we find that particular balance where a mall comes up and then we find SMEs closing down? Those have been in business for many, many years, closing down because of that tension with big shopping malls versus your SMEs. And then I would like to know which particular department has that investigation that has caused the over expenditure instead of being at 75% to 78%. Which particular department has this? Has that particular investigation gone into? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to start off, is that while annually for 2019 we grew by 0.2%, we are in a recession. The South African economy was a hairline, we'd be bald at this moment in time. I think it's our third technical recession in the space of 2-3 years. And the failure to make the correct domestic policy choices is where it needs to be, or where the blame needs to be laid. We can't continue, and I see this in presentations, we've moved from economic challenges of the global financial crisis to the latest trend in coronavirus. And whilst understanding we have a highly globalized economy and that international shocks in the financial markets have effects on it, it's about time that we stop passing the buck. The fact is that our domestic policy making capacity and capacity to implement is just not up to scratch. In terms of the DTI's third quarter report, Chair, there are very soft targets that are set in terms of jobs retained that are tied into programs. Like, for instance, there was a failure to meet the target of 3,000 where they only got 751 jobs that were created. And then also supporting incentives, businesses through incentives, also 135. Now, there's a reason provided in the presentation to say that there wasn't such a large uptake, but in the committee meeting last week, I raised the fact that there was a delay in automotive incentive scheme, as well as 12-hour incentives, because the steering committee didn't sit for a period of time. So we should also be honest in the report. I don't think that it's genuine on the part of the officials to come and tell us that people didn't take up when they weren't dispersing the funds and the incentives as they should. I think that it doesn't prove to be a very good relationship with the committee. Then the next thing that I want to talk about, Chair, is that on page 6 of the EDD presentation, you'll see it says that the uptake on the downstream steel competitiveness fund has been less than satisfactory due to its stringent application criteria, particularly as it relates to BBBE. The pricing was also considered too high. Now, if that's not an admission that over-regulation in our economy is not working, then I don't know, Chair. We have a serious problem in the steel industry as we sit through government protection of a foreign-owned company. And we now make it more difficult for downstream steel producers and manufacturers to actually gain market access. And I'm looking forward to the address by the Minister, I think it's on the 18th of March, where he comes and briefs us on his plans to take charge of the steel industry and to hopefully implement deep-cutting reforms. Because I think that our steel industry is in extremely, extremely hot water. And, Chair, overall, in terms of where we sit as a department, I would like to understand, once the Department of Economic Development is collapsed, if I can use that term, into the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, what is then going to be the situation with the DGs? Who becomes the DG? Is there going to be a separate process that appoints the DG? Will there be a redeployment of certain officials within the department? If that could please be explained to me so that I can also understand.
I just have 2 points to make with regards to DGI and presentation. I think we are making job creation a byline. By the way, we're creating jobs. By the way, jobs are lost. But the total point of having a Department of Trade and Industry is growth in the industry so that the state is viable and is able to sustain itself through job creation, through creation of opportunities for people to make a life for themselves on their own terms. On the part of black industrialists and the funding that's been given to them in regards to making production of parts in the automotive sector, I would like a written response from the DTI as to how many black industrialists are you funding in terms of the manufacturing of the parts in the automotive industry relative to the overall other manufacturers in the industry. And how are they performing in terms of competition with the other manufacturers in the automotive industry? So we can get a sense of whether it's growing or it's just giving money to our friends to front it if they are owning businesses, whereas there's no function, there's no progress in terms of assimilating those previously disadvantaged. Secondly, with regards to EDD, I think my opinion, when we talk about township economy, we are talking about bringing the economy to the people. So meaning access to the people. It should not be a patronizing statement to say in the word township economy. So mine is to basically ask, how involved are your municipalities in your social economic policy framework? Because I feel like they should be the most integral part of national government to partner directly with the municipalities to make sure that there is implementation and understanding of what we say when we say we are looking for a township-based economy and growing that economy. My point is this, that what you do in New Brighton is not what you're going to do in Soweto. So you're not going to put a rough-cut plan that's going to work with each and every space, where urban areas, where people are struggling with creating employment for themselves. So I want to understand what government is doing in partnering directly with municipalities, leaving out provinces, because that's just back of the 90s anyway. The municipalities are the ones directly affected by unemployment.
Those are
my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be short. I won't ask 12 questions. just on a lighter note, considering the DG's remarks on Brexit, I suppose that he's a great supporter of Brexit, because it obviously puts South Africa in a better space. No, just on a lighter note, I think Premier Boris Johnson will appreciate it. As far as the labour market is concerned, on the EDD presentation, I think we all would agree that it's very alarming that our unemployment rate of the youth is currently at 41.5%, and that 6.7 million people hasn't got jobs. And what I want to include here is the fact that Minister Tito Mboweni stated that 18 million people are dependent on grants. 18 million. And I know how it escalated since 2004. I think it was less than 10 million then. And that is really, really a problem. I hear that we're making use of them in a bunch of like township economies, etc. Over years, this economy has been centralized by government. And what one should do is to develop local economies, localization. We should have self-respecting communities. Communities who have more say in their own effects, localism. Even if you invest a lot of money in a township or a community, opening a chain store or a mall, whatever, the wealth leaves that community because the products are being imported from outside. I really feel that we should restructure the whole idea of localism, making communities more independent from the state and not making people more dependent on the state, like the 18 million people who are receiving grants. I think the core of our economic development lies there. Chair, thank you. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just a few clarifying questions. Maybe my right will be from the previous question I requested from the minister in terms of the sugarcane master plan. The concern is of the loss of job opportunities. And I really don't understand because there's also closing of these sugar mills in the sugar industry. What are the interventions there? Do you have a plan or part of the plan is in the master plan? Because we always talk of master plan that is coming, but currently you are facing the challenge of unemployment. And our main objective in terms of industrial development is to create jobs. So I'm not so sure whether we're speaking what we're doing or we do want to speak. But that, I just wanted to check that in terms of the... Do you have any plans to revive those few sugar mills that have been closed? Do you have a plan in this part? How are we going to grow that? And a plan in terms of us to what black farmers are while they're having hectares and hectares of sugar. Then I'm not so sure whether there's any agreement currently before the master plan is coming. Because my understanding is that those institutions, they must have an understanding and agreement before we can develop a master plan that speaks to the entire industry. Chair, I think also I can get a clarity in terms of the legislation. Because we're speaking of legislation, regulation, what are we looking at? Because as a committee, we have been drafting bills and legislation, but nothing is coming forthcoming. Can we check where the quality, where the performance, how far are we? Can we be able to continue drafting and making laws that are not going to be implemented? Are we still within our mandate? Chair, I think one but not least, this thing of 0.2% is shocking, very much shocking. I don't know where the department is, where we raise your fees, what can we have? Because even awareness and education is not robust to our constituents. People don't know about our departments. Are we able to develop programs that speaks to those
because now, as my learned colleague has just indicated, the rural township development, what is it that has to do with Amagwinya on the street? Is it, so we must be able to do all those things. That those rural people that are farming their own cattle, how are they going to benefit in the rural development? Also, the funding model. You have NEF, you have IDC, you have CIFA. How do they connect? Because you must be able to know exactly CIFA is funding from this up to there, then NEF from here up to there, and IDC as well. You cannot just say black industrial all over. They show black industrial. We must be able to see and feel and touch those black industries, and you can be able to realize maybe our objective in the long run. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think we must just maybe at the later stage ask the department to just unpack the social economy policy framework as it relates to our department and the work of our department. Then the decline in the manufacturing sector has been going on for a long time, for many years, and this is worrying because it contributes to low economic growth. So are there any additional factors to the decline in this sector besides the imports and the under-invoicing that we've heard about? And then in addition to the incentives, what other support will the department give to support the revival of the manufacturing sector? Thank you, Chair.
The challenge of BBB11 for companies to transit. In collaboration with the BE Commission, how is the country dealt with all these issues? Secondly, the requirements for automotive incentive schemes. Does it include the commitment of local procurement, local content? Lastly, Gigi, on your presentation, you spoke about the SEZ in Tshwane, where they demonstrate that SEZ should also factor in the skills development as BMW does in Tshwane. Will this be enrolled to other SEZ in other provinces? Thank you, Chair.
Maybe what we would try and just highlight, this is that we said sugar, and my colleague Moyane talked sugar cane. And I think it all starts with sugar. So I thought maybe what might be helpful, there was an issue of alternative use of sugar cane particularly in terms of that bioethanol. So there might be a point, I'm not sure if it's covered on the program, and if ever it is covered on the sugar program, maybe some clarity will assist a bit on that part. The other point is just on the MassMart Walmart measure. It was around 2011 we had the measure. And at this point, January 2020, there is an announcement of 1,440 jobs that might be shared by MassMart. So I think it might be just important to see how were they actually working for the period to say after so long, you know, there's a measure, after a certain period they can't actually retrench anybody, and over a particular time they are. It's January 2020, the timing in terms of period that they can be able to retrench, because that might be one point. But one is just wanting to know, out of that measure of MassMart and Walmart, how are we doing in terms of performance
of the company. I'm sure for Honourable Member Kappa, that we will actually be receiving more of the DTIC moving further. I'm sure it will cover all issues, including the issue of DGs. I think the minister actually has to come and engage. I'm sure at a certain time we'll be able to pick up on the issue. The final point I thought maybe one would like to speak to, the black industrialists. It's an issue of, from my side, increasing participation of black people in the economy. I'm just saying. And if ever that's the understanding, when you look at the majority of South Africans, you'll easily raise the point of women participation. And also, if you look at majority, you'll focus on youth. So sense is to say, how are we doing in ensuring that the majority of South Africans do participate in the economy? So I want to actually get the black industrialist issue reflected within that kind of logic, because that's what I think. Because on my part, if ever a black industrialist program performs better, there's lots of people for fewer people, even if they may be of whatever color, which means we have been defeated because we have actually lost out. We wanted to make sure that majority of South Africans participate in the economy. That's why we have black industrialists. Okay, maybe we can actually leave it at that and then maybe take DGs and the team to actually take comments on the clarity questions and comments we've taken. Thank you.
Chair, thanks. I'll be very brief because I think probably the hub of the questions is really the deep question which a lot of members have asked about the low growth and how we can deal with that challenge at the local government level. But if I could just quickly go through the questions, but starting with which is sort of the last question. Just on the question of, as you asked about the incentives and what are the conditional analogies for the autos with regards to local content. So we, as you know, we give incentives to the auto industry if they invest. Only if they invest, we give a maximum of up to 20% of that investment. So they put in 100 million, we put in about 20 million to assist them to lock in that investment. We've increasingly tied the conditionalities where we ensure that they make the local component manufacturing here. So we introduced two measures. The one is we currently at 45% local content, and progressively they will move to 65% local content. And then also with regards to black economic empowerment, we introduced that they must reach a level of, to the start of it, it will be level 8, which we introduced a few years ago. They must move to level 8, and by 2021 next year, they must all move to level 4. So our incentives are conditional on them reaching level 4 on the BSO scorecard. On the question of, given the, as I said, the good progress on Tshwane, where we've had the 18 investors, where will it be replicated elsewhere? Yes, the good news is, yes, the supplier park idea is taking root, because we know the first one, we had the one around Volkswagen a few years ago, which Kucha Industrial Development Corporation did. They have a supplier park for Volkswagen in Uitenhage. And then we had the Roslyn one, which is around the BMW and Nissan plant. We had Tshwane, and the good news is Toyota is now just told us they want to not be left out. So with KZN, we're working on a Manzan Toti. We're going to build a Toyota park there, but also a big investment. That whole town is going to have a significant upgrade in KZN around the Toyota supplier park, and we hope to repeat this model. As I said, and we're using Kucha as a big advisor because they've got experience of both in the Nelson Mandela Supply Park in Italy. On Robert Kling's question, I think the first one is, I think, yes, the issue of the trade surpluses in Africa and so on. So globally, I mean, as I said, nationally, in terms of our exports to the whole world, we ran a surplus of 31 billion. So our exports is about 1.2 trillion, and our imports is 31 billion less than that on imports. So that is a historic change, as was mentioned by our chief economist there around the trade balance. With regards to the continent, for our quarter, what we reported on page 11 was that our exports just for the quarter was 90 billion rand. We imported only 30 billion, which means we had a trade surplus for the continent of 60 billion. Now the question is this, that it's not sustainable for us to continuously grow our surplus. Because remember, when we export to another country, we're taking money out of their economy and they pay us. And we must buy more from them as well, because we want to include intra-Africa trade so that they can also, because once you buy from them, they get income and they can buy more from you. So that's why trade balance is so important at that African level. That was the only point I was making about, we mustn't just rejoice our big trade surplus with the continent. It's not sustainable to run such a massive surplus with your trading partners. Yeah, the surplus, maybe the surplus, the 60 billion surplus. But our exports, is, as I said, has grown exponentially. But the 60 billion is declining, which is a positive signal. Yeah. On the question, you're right. I mean, as I said, you're really the champion of this thing, and I want to really ask that we continue this thing and find the beneficiation and so on. As you know, it has been it's a big struggle for us to get beneficiation of our raw materials. As I said, we're able to now move into sophisticated manufacturing in autos, trucks, buses, aircraft, and so on. But we haven't cracked the raw material part. But I say, as I said, so it's a continuous journey, but we, after 3-4 years of intensive work, next month, we're launching a fuel cell plant, a commercial fuel cell plant, a Chem Energy, it's a Taiwanese company. They are setting up a fuel cell plant to supply all the telecom, you know, the telco towers that is generated by fuel cells and hydrogen fuel cells. They are setting up that plant. The investment is 150 million rand investment. It will be in Dubai Trade Port. We've been working with them for the past few years, and we're praying that everything will go okay. But that will be the first commercial investment where we add value to our platinum. Because as you know, all our platinum is sent to Japan and Taiwan, and then that's where they make the platinum beneficiation. So we've been, and then also we've got another one, Isondo, which will be setting up in the Ouartambo, as you said, which is, we have just signed the agreement with 10X, the Russian company, to make an investment also in fuel cell. So we've landed two, and it's come to fruition, but as I said, it's been worked for the years we've been working on it. And then also, if you realize in Honorable Makura's State of the Province address, he, around the Springs area, in the Khurleni, we are creating a platinum SEZ extension there of the SEZ to include platinum. So that is the work we're doing, but as I said, it's difficult work to ask people to bring, because it's high tech, it's skills, and also we need to attract them to start producing here and so on. But it's a continuous journey. We definitely take your point. That is our essential problem, is the low value of our mineral exports. On the question of, I think you raised a question which I will come to later, is about the example you made about the Queenie and the local government problem about, well, are we getting that right? Are we leveraging on our incentive? And I want to come here to the question of supply side and demand side. So currently the manufacturing sector is now 1.6 million people who works in manufacturing. So the DTI's contribution, we've been, as I said, our job is to protect that 1.6 million so that we have a strong industrial sector. And as so we take our job with all of our, from clothing and textiles to steel, all the intervention is done. So I think we are completely under-resourced in terms of what we put into incentives. As I said, the EU budget just for the agricultural sector is 37% of their budget goes to support for the sector. So we are, with our 6 billion budget for incentive, out of a 1.1 trillion budget, it's insignificant what we put in, but we try to, that's why we have to be so sparse with our incentive. But the problem that's emerging now is no longer on the supply side of the economy. So I take the point, there's been the one or two cases, and I think we apologize for that, for the delayed payments. We've tried to, 90% of our incentives are paid within the timelines, but we've had a, we kind of fix that problem of the those one or two 12-hour incentives. But I think I chair that committee. The problem is this, we've received no new fresh applications. Before, in last year, we didn't have enough budget. And we had to delay payments for people under 12-I. This year, Malebo is the DDG there. She will tell you, we sit now in meetings and there's no new application. We're just processing the old ones. So the problem is no longer on the supply side of the budget. The problem is there's no demand for the products from manufacturers. So factories are running at 60% capacity. So if the demand side of the economy, and as I said, the real problem is government spending at the local level has declined 18%. That's why your construction companies are closing down, because there is no spend by the SOEs, and there's no spend by local government, or there's a decline in spending by 18%. So there's no demand from the factories. So the problem is no longer on the supply side. As I said, there was a lot, but we industries are competitive. That's why you can see the auto industry is growing, because they're growing on exports. So those people who can export are using global demand, and as you can see, our trade balance is improving. Citrus exports into Europe and so on, but local demand is falling. And I think that's the heart of our supply side problem. I think I try to do some of the points made Honourable Cuthbert. I think we will give a detailed report on the steel industry. We are giving a report here and in the next Monday. The team will be in the Western Cape Legislature, specifically around South Africa Steel, and we will give you a comprehensive update on that. Honourable Iyako, as I said, the question of the DGs, that's above my pay grade. As the chair indicated, the minister and the president will deal with that. The question of Honourable Yako, I think we will definitely give you, you've asked a really crisp question about the municipalities at the local level, which I think, as I said, is the heart of the problem. And what we've done on our visits now, because we've spent extensive time in Mfuleni, Naval, Sedibeng, we spent time in KZN now, in Eastern Cape, Motherwell, Kwanabushle, all these areas. The problem now is that, as I said, the industrial area, in terms of the private sector, some of them are full with private companies. The problem is there's been a massive decline in the level of water, electricity, and just basic maintenance of the road. Infrastructure. So it's absolutely collapsed. As I said, in Isitere, it's very bad. And then, as I said, in Esakeni, in Ladysmith, even worse. In Newcastle, even worse. So what I'm saying is that's why the district model, the president boosted this thing, and our new budget proposal is that we've run a big budget deficit. So it looks like we've got a stimulatory budget. But as I said, it's on operational expenditures, not on capital spending. So the president wants to shift the budget from spending time on salaries and wages, but by shifting it to capital spending. So once we do that, and with the appointment of Cosienzo
Mahopa, hopefully the next 3 months, the key, all of his projects are municipal projects of that, because you have to create the capability at that level. So for example, to help and get the Mpuleni water problem resolved, we've decided you can't just have ad hoc interventions and so on, you must create the capability. So we've put in, inside a project management unit, and we've just employed the head of that unit for the Bao, and we have employed one for Chwani. So that we build a team that will be full-time to fix the local problem, because the investors are waiting. As you know, there's a big Heineken investment in the Vaal, the multi-billion investment, but they need water and they need that. So it's to get this connection right between local government and the investment. But I think that's probably the heart of our challenge. Honorable Mota, yes, you're right. I'm really enthusiastic about this potential for the relationship with the UK if they emerge successfully from the Brexit problem, which is their own goal for them. But the advantage for us and for the continent is that the UK has always been more global and more and less protectionist than the rest of Europe, especially the southern Spain and so on. And they aim to develop a much more dynamic partnership with us, because they also, they're the ones who invented free trade. But so they're opening up their market much more, and also they've just, we've just come from a conference there, which Honorable Danil and Mahopa went to, but they held an infrastructure conference. So that I think there is potential in the continent. I think Honorable Mboyani, with regard to sugarcane, we, as I said, that master plan, we're busy finalizing and crossing the dots, but it will mainly entail that, as you know, the biggest problem is the drop in demand and the increasing imports of sugar. So part of the master plan is the big companies like your Cokes, your Tiger Brands, the biggest consumers of sugar, they agree to, as part of the master plan, buy local, buy from our local sugar, from Ilovo and Tonga and so on. And then obviously the black farmers sell to the sugar mills and so on. So that's the heart of the master plan. But the part that we must still resolve is the sugar levy. Because what has happened is with the sugar levy, the demand for sugar has dropped dramatically. So people are using their sugar. And we need to therefore have, you must stimulate demand for sugar in biofuels and in new sectors, new uses of sugar and so on. So that's the other part of the master plan. But we are seized with it. I know it doesn't, as I said, the news, especially with regards to Tonga, is really getting bad there. But hopefully that will be, we'll finalize that master plan in the next, month or so. Honorable Hermans, I think you raised the question of the social economy. But as I said, the declining manufacturing is now a complete demand problem. Because we are seeing the investment figure, as you could see in that quarter, 10% up. There are companies investing because they are dominant in the market, they're exporting and so on, but there's people are not buying. So there's no demand for steel, because we're not building anything. There's no demand for cement, because we are not building things, and especially it's government spending that's down. And therefore, the problem now on the manufacturers on the demand side. And there's no use, Maynard Keynes used to say it's like pushing a string. You're going in the wrong direction, you know. You can't just tell companies to be more competitive, but there's no need to buy the product. I think I dealt with Honorable Bhutan's question. Thanks.
Thank you very much. You know what Honorable Lekha said? I agree with you that actually downstream of his deal, in particular, France is under pressure. But if you look at the interventions that actually being made in that area, now I did make a point about the export check, and I do and also understand that if you look at the whole value chain, right, the upstream will have a view, right, for instance, if you speak about the ANSA, they will have a view about the export check,
but that view will not be a general view. But what we are actually, what is actually being done there is actually to address the beneficiation at the lower end. One important action that is being taken. Now, the second one, the one there that is about the competitive fund, like that competitive fund that is under the IPC. Remember there that we actually reviewed the criteria, that is the pricing, right? We did that in November, when we actually saw that that pricing for the small, for the smaller participants, that's the large ones, are actually they need to be reviewed, right? We reviewed that, and I think now the progress, there is a progress there. There is a kick up on that fund. Now, those are two glaring actions that we actually took, right, in the scheme, right, scheme industry specifically. Now, I do want just to ask, then just to clarify the growth, that point, that's 0.2 growth, right? Because it's important that we actually get that in the context. Yes, it's not a good growth, right? And then just very quickly just talk to that. And I do want to just to deal with the mall development versus the SMEs thing. Now, I also do want to just to deal with the issue about the township, I do want to deal with that, right? Because I wanted to put it in the context of currently, what we mean, when you look at the statistics FA, how they define what is the township. In fact, you will not pick that up, but they do define what is the rural area. And their life has a problem. We need to be able to have a common understanding of what do we mean by this phenomenon. So for our planning purposes. But I do want to just review that. I think that on the social economy, I think the minister did also touch the point, right? Because as long as we don't actually, when you talk about local economy, you don't talk to the competitive advantage of the special area, what is it that specific area is actually has got a potential in, and then exploit that, then we always speak under generalities about economic development. Right. Now, in that framework which we call social economy, which at some stage probably will need to be presented, because in there it begins to actually to identify what is it in those local economies that needs to be taken into account, especially when you start talking about the reduction of poverty in those specific areas and looking at the value chain, looking at what are the unfair markets, what are the underserved markets in those areas, right? Because as the Honorable Yako makes the point, right, when you speak about these townships, it cannot be one size fits all, because they will be, they are different. But that framework, it begins to start talking to that aspect, the importance of actually being able to do that and differentiate them in that way. Then if you could just speak to that.
Thank you, Niji. Just very briefly, and just purely technically, what the different numbers mean and the mean for all of our benefits. So there are two numbers. The quota GDP result is gives us a contraction of 1.4%. Now that's the seasonally adjusted annualized change in real GDP, which means it's been adjusted for inflation. It's been annualized, meaning the South African economy did not contract by 1.4% from Q3 to Q4. It contracted by about 0.3%. If you annualize it, so if you treat that change as though it's happening for a year, you get a contraction of 1.4%. So it's just a technical clarification. Any way you look at it, it's not a great result. If we take the four quarters of that year, three of them were contractions, three of the four quarters, in other words. The other way of looking at GDP is just to look at what we would call the year-on-year change. And if you look at the last quarter of 2019 and compare it to the last quarter of 2018, that's when you get real GDP growth of 0.2%. Thank you.
The last point, Chef, with all the question of the measure, the mathematics and the format, right? Now, yes, you are correct that the public interest condition that we put here on these measures, but unfortunately, in this instance, you find that those conditions actually last about a year or two ago. So, and themselves, their argument is not that they are arguing that they are meeting or not meeting, right, those conditions. But their point now is about the performance of the organization, right, because of the economic conditions. Right, they say that they want to revisit the number of staff that they actually have based on that. But we are still under that negotiation there with now, on the small businesses and the more, right, we do deal with the impact of the mall development under the grocery and retail market inquiries, right? And actually we ask and come out with what are the remedies, right, that we are actually suggesting to be exercised. And again, those remedies, those remedial actions are critical when we start talking about local economies, because it is in those economies that those remedial actions, they need to be negotiated with those malls that are actually participating. Remember that with the grocery, it's not a mere recommendation, but there are remedial actions that need to be taken into account, and our large supermarkets, they are aware about themselves, and even the mall about that. Now, the last point here, Chairperson, is the part about, I think we have dealt with the sugar. I think later dealt with that, the sugar and the sugar cane, right? But of course, in the master plan, right, also that is actually classified there, I think.
Let me just say that we try and actually round up, because I think in terms of the comments that have actually come through, one was actually DG thinking it might be important to have a look on how the measure has actually, because 2011 to date, if ever there was actually sufficient stability contribution to the economy. And at this stage, with the loss of jobs, because that will be the number, one interesting aspect was the supplier development, where we're trying to get supply. I'm not sure if ever would have sense of saying if the measure was successful, and then be able to highlight specifics. Maybe we can follow through on that. It might be important because our reaction is on the basis of retrenchments of jobs as we see them. But you might find that they have been over time some benefits which we actually can be able to talk to, strengthen and actually grow as a part of what is very important. DG, October, I was actually thinking we may have to look at the issue of black industrialist in a discussion that doesn't actually put it as competition, you know, on the basis where the statement that we will have would say the economy is still in white hands. And then you start to say black industrialist as if you are setting up a competition. But the reality is that when you say the economy is in white hands, which means the majority of South Africans are left out, they do not participate in the economy. Does this actually, the black industrialist, create space to grow the economy? Does it actually create space for more South Africans to participate in the economy? Because if ever we look at it that way, you might find that it adds a bit of value than actually having a discussion which we actually minimize things to a point where we think race would be an issue that actually present an argument when the economy is shrinking nationally. I don't think it's a relevant discussion. It doesn't make sense even if we actually get involved from that kind of engagement. So I think further, the last point was just around municipalities. It will be important to have a look at their capacities, capability as municipalities, because I know for sure with Maluti Akufong, the last interaction we had, the engineers were going to go on retirement, water engineer and electricity engineer. Obviously, which means they did go on retirement, but I'm not sure because we haven't actually followed through to say when the engineers retire, what was the kind of replacement or maintenance of that skill within the municipality. Issues which were quite obvious because I think from the DTI, there was an issue relating to Nestle. Nestle with about 6 or 8 stores, with the disruption relating to quality of services, water and electricity. Nestle was able to give a 6 month disruption cost, which was close to 100 million rands in terms of just outages of electricity and water. And when you have a look at that, you can see that the private sector can play a role because in terms of the losses they have because of disruption of services, it's actually quite expensive for them, and it actually might actually create challenges for them to do business productively. Because if ever they actually can use a bit of that 100 million they lost, maybe there can be stability on electricity, water, and roads, which is actually quite important. So can I actually then conclude and thank the team for the input? I'm sure we would actually, because we have a session of talking to each other every 3 months. I'm sure we actually do have the next phase.